Blog Talk Radio.
Scares me every time.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros.
Welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. And we're back. There's a lot of stuff to talk about here in boxing. A lot of news, a lot of breaking news that we need to catch up with. One of our writers, Brian Fogg, was able to get a story that's kind of caught everybody's eye and ears. Dante Wilder, the Olympian bronze medalist, has gotten in a little bit of a trouble. Robert the Ghost Guerrero. Let's talk a little bit about him. You guys want to call in, you absolutely can. Don't forget to download the mobile app.
Is he fighting?
Listen.
I just.
This is my thing here. It's like that song right now by Drake. Started from the bottom, now we're here. But you got to do something when you get there. You just don't walk in. I mean, listen. He won, to me, he won the verbal war. To me, he won the stare down. He won the press conference, the last of it. He had the upper hand. He wasn't intimidated. He didn't fall into the sleep of Floyd Mayweather Jr., but he ended up getting memorized in the ring. After that third round, Robert the Ghost Guerrero had nothing. And my thing is that, you know, you pounded your table left and right, wanting this fight with the pound-for-pound king, with our generation's best fighter in the world. And you went in with no game plan. The game plan was to try to push him back, but there was no pushing back. There was no setting him up and cutting the ring off and making the square ring smaller. I don't know if he thought that Floyd was going to walk himself back. And to me, you got to give even more credit to Miguel Cotto, who's an older, over-the-hill type of fighter, but he shows you the ring intelligence. He shows you the reason why he's relevant is because he understands that fists don't always get the job done. A game plan does, a solid game plan. And that's a lot of things that a lot of these younger fighters are missing out, is a solid game plan. Yes, you got there. You got there. But you have to be there with a game plan against Floyd Mayweather.
Well, I mean, you know, Roger Mayweather always says, you know, people don't know shit about boxing. And I've said this on the show before. I said it, not last week, but I said it on a different radio show, the one I do up in Washington, Game Time with the Z Twins. Floyd showed in this fight that what they mean by that, but what Roger means by that, they're, boxing isn't just what happens in the ring. It's who you choose to fight, where you choose to fight, how you choose to fight.
Absolutely.
It's the art of war. And, you know, Guerrero acted like, you know, like these were two kids that were going to Disneyland. And Floyd had been to Disneyland so many times that he's not impressed by it. He knows all the best spots. He knows where to go. He knows what he likes and how he likes to do Disneyland. And Guerrero acted like a kid who'd never been there before, never been anywhere before, and went just tearing off towards it. And was so exhausted with his excitement, by the time he got there, he just kind of droned his way through and just kind of didn't really enjoy it. He was too zonked out. And that's how he fought. He treated the promotion like that kid. He just kind of went running in there, jumped on all the rides. The dad went crazy. He became the crazy trainer dad. And they didn't take time to look around and check their surroundings and to look at their enemy and to see how he was reacting and really where they were. They didn't get the big Floyd fight on HBO. That's a whole different brand. It's a whole different world, that HBO deal and Floyd over there, how he was treated, what it was leading to. Other people have pointed this out. I think it's a great way to look at it in terms of what the numbers are going to do and just how to approach that world. This is the first time Floyd has had a fight in a long time where we weren't going to be talking about Manny Pacquiao once it was over because dude got knocked the hell out. So But Guerrero's people, the way they acted, they treated this as if it was in that HBO world. This is a whole new world. This is the first of six fights. Notice it wasn't a Golden Boy slash Mayweather Promotions promotion. It was a Mayweather Promotions in association with Golden Boy. It was the first on, you know, it was Showtime giving full treatment to Floyd. I mean, a documentary on CBS, a documentary on Showtime, his own version of 24/7, but all very skewed towards the executive producer who was Floyd Mayweather. It was Mayweather's world, and in that world where you're rebranding and you're beginning, a lot of guys are saying, oh, this is a failure, it was a flop, Floyd got the guaranteed money. We'll talk about that later with Steve. And I do think it's kind of a bad thing, but you got to look at it. It's the first of six fights, and what we got was that Friday card with Errol Spence, Joseph Diaz Jr. You know, you got to remember this is all like Heyman, Golden Boy, and Floyd. It's all one brand together. And they're introducing you to this brand. All weekend you saw TMT in the corner. You saw the kind of the crossover promotion, Paulie Malignaggi working that Friday fight on Fox Sports. I thought it, you know, was going to be Doug. I don't know how that's all working, but Paulie was there instead. You started to see this kind of brand, and it's the first of six. So you don't know, I mean, how it's going to be in six fights when all, you know, these guys like Spence and Diaz, who I think are going to be stars, begin to emerge four or five fights in, you know, where they'll fight other places, but then you'll see them featured on these Mayweather weekends where it's a huge media blitz. Robert allowed himself to become the bad guy and to be the foil. He's a good guy with a good story, but with the dad acting that way and with him acting that way, inexperienced and screwing up with the gun, like, let me impress everybody, I'll bring a gun to a photo shoot like an idiot. And now he's going to go to probably jail for that. He allowed himself to be the bad guy because he thought he was on HBO. He didn't realize he was on Showtime, where Floyd's remaking himself into the good guy. The I've had a wild past, but now I'm humble Floyd, good guy. I think that carried over into the fight. His aggression was used against him until he was just rendered impotent. And I think it happened in the promotion. I don't think he won the stare down. He showed that he could hang and look good staring down. But his dad did all the talking. His dad kind of flipped out. I mean, he was honest, but he flipped out. I just think on every level, Floyd kind of lured him into a false paradise and then just owned him.
You know, Robert definitely had the youth. He had the strength. He had the drive. But it goes back down to it is a game plan. You can have all those three other things, but if there is no game plan, and it doesn't matter if it's just against Floyd, it's against any fighter, any boxer out there, a guy that knows how to use the fundamentals of the ring, you got to have a little bit more, a little extra. And that's something that I thought this team worked on. Instead, if there was a game plan, that game plan went out the door on the second or third round. You saw the blank face of the ghost. I mean, he was ghost.
And in the corner, he was ghost. You know, the dad was talking and passionate, and he was just blank stare. He wasn't – where was the nasty guy that – I watched the Berto fight. Like, people say, like, why did you change your pick? I watched a lot of tape leading into the fight, and I know we know who Floyd Mayweather is and we know who Robert Guerrero is, but, you know, you got to go back and really look at the minutia and try to see how those things would match up. And the thing that I really liked about Robert was that he seemed pissed off against Berto, and he was kind of nasty. He just seemed deer in the headlights in this fight. I don't know why, but he got to the mountaintop. He didn't have a game plan. Yeah. He didn't go for it.
He got memorized. I mean, you know, he went in there thinking that this fight was going to be given to him. You know, I mean, that happens to a lot of fighters is that they go, okay, I beat this guy. I showed that I could be here at 147. I got the big fight, the fight that I've been asking for, the fight that I want. But then what happens is guys forget that what got you to that point was by putting in the work and studying tape and watching the guy for the mistakes that you could capitalize on. To me, it looked like Robert just got in there thinking, this guy's older than me, his legs are slower, he's going to be there for me to hit, and I'm going to be able to out-muscle him the way I did a Berto. Styles make fights. And if you go in there with the mentality that you're going to be able to take out every single guy the way you've done to other guys, then you're going in with the wrong game plan. And that's why I got very impressed with Canelo. He changed his style. He added a little bit more sugar to it. He added a little bit more finesse to it. And it made him a different fighter. You know why? Because he was in with a guy that was more of a better boxer than him. And he knew that. And it's really rare that you see that now with fighters that are able to make an adjustment to something that they've done repetitively. And Robert just showed me that there's the drive, but there's no driver behind the wheel. Anyways, fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598, you certainly can. We'll patch you on through. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. We're going to be having our writer, Brian Fogg, going to be calling in about 5:15. We're going to be talking about Manny Pacquiao and Brandon Rios. We're going to be talking about Lamont Peterson and Lucas Matisse. We're going to be talking about a lot of stuff here, especially about Dante Wilder. And we're going to be talking about Amir Khan's tweets over here asking for the fight with Floyd Mayweather, believing that he deserves it, and says that the fight with Lamont Peterson and with Danny Garcia, it's always going to be there. But the Floyd Mayweather fight should be up for grabs for it. You know, here's another guy that is pumping himself up, but you went how many rounds with Julio Diaz? You went the full distance. Amir, you know what? I'm not going to knock anybody down to get their hustle. They're trying to make that big dollar bill. They're trying to get their names out there and be exposed. But, you know, it always throws me back. And I'm pretty sure you remember this, Gabriel. It always throws me back when Lennox Lewis, when he knocked out Michael Grant, he called him a hurry, come up, and go back. Where they're in a rush to get to the top, and then they just kind of get thrown out of the loop, you know, and then you never hear about them again. Fighters don't want legacy anymore; they want paydays.
The sport's really changed, you know. It feels like, anyways, that divisions don't really matter anymore. Guys don't really want to sit and be the man in a division. They kind of want to maneuver to the big fights, and I guess we've seen that. It's kind of rare. Remember, we used to see it. When there was like that one guy, you know, there was either like Tyson or there was De La Hoya, and people kind of flooded towards them. What we've seen in recent years, which is kind of rare, is that you had two cash cows in Pacquiao and Floyd. I don't think Pacquiao ever fights in the U.S. ever again, just with the tax thing that's going on. You know, Pacquiao Rios is going to be in Asia. Again, we'll talk more with Steve, who's got more in-depth stuff on it and wrote about it for Max Boxing this week. But so we've seen like people hit 140 and then try to move right to 147, or guys don't really want to stay there. They've had two avenues to kind of funnel themselves towards. And I think you do see, I don't know if it's a dilution of, I'm not really much of a historian, so like linear and that doesn't really turn me on. But yeah, like weights haven't really mattered as much. Divisions jumping hasn't really mattered as much. Like guys saying to me, sorry, I'm handling an editorial thing. I'm going to look away from my computer, Dave. It's been a few weeks since we've done the show, so you know. But we were just kind of deciding what's going to be the lead tonight. So I don't know. Okay, with Amir Khan, you know, talking about that fight. God, we have so much to cover. It's been a while. I really liked the fight for Amir. I thought it was exactly what he needed. It was interesting. Remember, we had the Julio Diaz interview, and he kind of convinced us both, like, you know what? Like, he's kind of got a shot, and I thought he did everything that he needed to do. That's
honestly,
you...
I did it. Yeah, I know. I mean, remember I said that they all speak a good game, but I'm not going to fall into that trap and believing in
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Well, at the end, I think we both picked him on by knockout.
Right.
Yeah.
I was surprised that it went the distance. I was surprised in how competitive it was. Just like with Zab Judah, I was very surprised in how competitive Zab was. I mean, he did get rocked. But here's the thing with Danny Garcia. If we go back when he fought Kendall Holt, this guy looked very unsure about himself. He didn't believe in his power. Didn't take the risk, the necessary risk, to get a guy out of there. Now
yeah.
he's become champion. I mean, when he threw a shot, when he threw a right hand, and you watch that fight, fight fans, go back and look at that fight. When he threw a right hand and he missed, he didn't decide to pivot and get his guard back up and reset himself. What he did, he would throw the punch. He was wide open to get countered, but lucky for him, he wasn't by Zab Judah because he was just a step behind in reflexes. So what Danny did was made him pay for not making, you know, for Zab not capitalizing on his mistake. So he would shoot again the right hand on a square stance. So that told me, here's a kid that's got confidence, but at the same time, fights with just pure balls. And there's no boxing set behind that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, it's hard to say if it's the dad thing, you know, the dad looking at your son. And I think it's more of an experience thing because, you know, they're such a trainer and fighter bond is such a delicate thing. You know, you want that chemistry, you want that trust. And, you know, you don't trust anyone more than you trust your father. You can see that in the way they work together. But so it's hard to get to that top level. I mean, here they have. They've fought to the top level. They picked the right management. They've picked everything correctly, and they're in a great position. Danny's the man right now, whether, you know, anybody thinks he should be or not. He's the man in the division, or slowly becoming it. You know, he's in the midst of becoming that. But, yeah, there's some definite flaws there, and you see what Judah did. But that fight and Con Diaz, those fights are the perfect fights for Amir Khan and for Danny Garcia. They're exactly the kind of fights that they're great for us because there was high drama. We didn't know how things were going to play out. Everybody fought with passion. I would say to Guerrero, like, why didn't you fight like that? Like, look at Zab Judah. Look at Diaz. They can't say, like, I didn't give it my all.
Right,
they can be upset that they lost. But we're still talking about them, and I get excited thinking about those fights. I would watch those fights again, and I have. I didn't have a lot of interest in rewatching Guerrero Mayweather. I did, but, you know, just because I wanted to know it, but there was no passion there. I didn't understand it. But Zab, man, it also makes you, like, you know, think. It's like Tyson talked about, you know, you're smart too late. If Zab had fought like that in other fights with that passion, and he just refused to lose, he refused to give it up. I mean, like, he's still, in my opinion, a king of Brooklyn. You know, he didn't successfully defend his territory, but he let Danny Garcia know that, you know, in order to rule this roost, you had to get through me on some level. And it was just a great, great little fight. But, you know, I look at, I don't know what the theme is here, but you look at this fight, and I just keep going back to Guerrero and Mayweather. Let's look at the positives, though. Floyd definitely has his legs. I was a little worried about some of the training he was doing, particularly the jumping rope with weights. I've heard that that's actually not good for you, and it's not really good for building those kind of dancing muscles, you know, that could Ali would have.
Well,
but,
I heard it hurts your joints, you know. It pulls the joints away. It's not supposed to be well, you know. But there's certain ways, though, of doing the weights with jump rope, you know.
You'd also have to just watch him. I'd have to see everything that they do in order to know. He looked fantastic.
Right.
I'd also like to know what he does in the off season. You know, how does he take care of himself? He had a kind of a rough time of it, you know, this last year. It's probably the roughest year off that he's had.
You know, here's the criticism you can never make about Floyd Mayweather. He comes and does his job very professional when he's in that ring. He's at home in that office, and there's no criticism there. You know, the criticism comes outside of the ring. With Robert Guerrero, he's got to take note. You know, I saw later there was tweets, you know, from his folks. He'll be back. Well, you know, I picked Robert to win because I like the youth. I like the aggressiveness. I thought that with the no fear type of mentality would get it done. But I also said that if he didn't have a game plan, we're going to get to see just a repeat of what Floyd is really good at. He's a guy that if you don't have a game plan, if you don't have a plan A, B, and C, and D, he's just going to mow right over you. And to me, it was like watching a landscaper just have go at a yard that had a lot of weeds, and he resodded it, and he put roses and flowers, and he threw out some new gravel and tampart. That's what I watched on Saturday night. Guerrero was a backyard that needed cleaning.
Yeah, you know, I think that's the thing. He'll be back, but will we? You know, I don't mind to, like, pile on a guy, and I don't
that's
think
good
you
fights
know,
for Robert.
He made a lot of money, so I don't think I am. You know, he's
yeah,
not.
There are good fights out there for Robert.
There are, but at the same time, I mean, dude, how many
now?
Pressure,
now
how
it's,
many,
all, it's all about working back to that top.
Well,
you know what I mean?
I just thought at
a
the
lot
end
of guys
it
don't
the,
do.
well, at the end of it, to say, and hey, you know, Floyd's got five fights left. Maybe I could work my way back and we could do this again. Why would we pay to see that again?
No, no.
You didn't
have
earn...
to do something so, like, over the top, something that's going to make everybody like, oh, okay, maybe the first fight was a fluke. But 9 out of 10, like I just said right now, you know, when you get there, you're on the top, and then you're pushed off the hill, and you roll down. A lot of times, you're never going to come back. You're going to stay exactly down there in the valley. I'm
well,
going to catch you in our
it, first... it just, yeah, it just, like, why would I want to see you freeze again? You know,
yeah.
It's like we're storming the beaches at Normandy. We may die. The guy that kind of plays it super safe and doesn't really get anything done, like, is that, I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's a terrible metaphor, but it just seemed like he got to the mountaintop. He didn't risk. He didn't go, I may never get here again. Again, I think Floyd understands boxing and how to pick a guy. In that third or fourth round when Robert shut it down, they're showing his kids and his wife. Is he thinking about that? Like, you know what, I just want to make it through this safe. And again, is that Floyd picking correctly the mentality of somebody that
well,
he cares about
too.
His family and he'd rather, like, fold up the tent and do the silent agreement and make the distance
right.
than risk getting knocked out?
Well, here's the thing, too. Understanding boxing and understanding your team. Everybody in the team has to have a significance, just not just to be there. You know, you don't have a guy just to be there. You have to have a team that knows how to have strategy you could sit down with. And that's the thing is that Floyd may portray himself as a boss, but I'm pretty sure the business mind of him is he's listening to everybody else, so he's able to make the right, correct chess moves. And that's what's something that a lot of fighters need to look into. This is not a I need to get there on my own. Yes, you are the guy in the ring, but it's really the team behind you that helps you. The tower coach, the field coach, the conditioning coach, the motivating coach, the strategy coach, the chef, all these guys, they partake a big part of a solid team. I got to patch in our first guest, and we'll get back in on Floyd Mayweather-Guerrero and the other fights that have happened past this weekend.
Cool.
Fight fans, call in 347-215-7598. We're going to have Steve Kim and Guy Robb, who just signed with Boxing 360. But let's get Brian Fong with us here on Leave the Ring. He has been covering, man, this kid's been doing, he's been putting in the work big time here. Hey, Brian, you there, brother?
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Doing good, man, doing good. Give us a little, before we, you know what's going on. We've read the article, so for some folks that haven't got on Leave the Ring website and catch your work and read your recent work, which is Deontay Wilder being arrested over the weekend, this past weekend. And there was a bit of confusion. First it was a woman, then it was a man. Now it's like, I don't know which one it is. Fill us in, what's going on?
Well, I mean, he was arrested on a domestic abuse via strangulation. And I spoke to a few sources who were all clear they couldn't specify whether it was a male or a female, which naturally they're trying to protect
wow.
the victim.
Wow.
And, a few media outlets just assumed it was a female.
Right.
Now, I mean, it probably was, but you can't just assume things, especially in a case like this.
No, you can't. You know what's funny is that when you were texting me and I was at work, one of the guys at work, because he saw me kind of just shaking my head, he's like, what's up, Dave? And I kind of explained the story to him, and then he threw out a story to me. And it made me laugh because I was like, you're right, we don't know if it's a man or a woman. Apparently a pipe fitter a while back was, in his apartment in his house, and he was yelling and screaming. And because of the light reflection from the curtain, you could see him physically pounding on a female. I mean, this guy was just wailing on her, calling her the B word, every name in the book. So the neighbors called the police. The police showed up, knocked on the door. He opened the door. They ransacked this guy, get him on the ground and everything, because when the police have rolled up, they saw him just wailing at this figure of a woman, right?
Yep.
They walk in. Well, it was neither a woman or a man. It turned out to be it was a blow up doll, and the guy was just letting aggression out because he was pissed off at his girlfriend.
That's awesome, though. I mean,
it is awesome.
I told you not to tell anybody that story, Dave.
Hey, so,
they caught you, Gabe.
For Dante Wilder, that's not what he's. his luck is not that good right now.
Well, for Wilder, though, maybe it's not too bad. I spoke to his attorney, Paul Patterson, who basically the first thing he told me was, the story's not as juicy as it seems. And basically Deontay thought he was getting mugged by, let's call it, the victim or person X.
So this was an escort meet?
I wasn't clear about that. They aren't able to specify, and I think anyone that says they know is speculating right now still. And there are a lot of rumors going around, but I haven't been able to find a legitimate source of any of it. You know, I've heard a lot of crazy things about Deontay, too, that he's some weird sexual fetish guy and things like that. And, you know, you can't report those things unless you have facts, so we'd have to lay off them.
I agree.
But back to what his lawyer was telling me. His lawyer, Mr. Patterson, said the misunderstanding, he thought he was getting mugged, turned around and hit the person. I mean, he said it in layman's terms. Apparently, Deontay and the victim have been in touch since then and have worked things out. So if that's true, it'd be tough for the prosecutors to be able to go forward with a case if the victims worked it out with Deontay.
You know, I think to be fair to him, because, you know, speculation is a speculation. We don't really know what the true story is that there's a strong possibility Deontay Wilder picked up on a young lady, decided to take her up to the room, was not an escort or any sort, you know, a male, whatever, it was just a female, and had his back turned, you know, to her, and she might have slipped, tried to grab his wallet or something of that nature, and it sparked defend myself or you know, stop her from trying to rob me. But, it's always never that cut and dry, unfortunately. You know?
Exactly. It's hard to try to find both sides of the story. But Paul Patterson and Deontay's team, JD, they think it'll be worked out within the next week or two. They really doubt the charges will go anywhere, it sounds
so
like.
It's basically what they're saying, there's going to be a buyout here somewhere. There's going to be
I think the prosecutors don't have a whole lot to run with in this case. If the victim has accepted Wilder's apology, I mean, that's their lead witness who won't be on the stand. So that's a tough one to win.
Did he punch the person? I mean, what was the charge?
From what I picked up, he threw punches, and I wasn't clear if they landed because you know how wide his punches are. But I know it's too soon for that, but I thought of it the other day. So, but via strangulation is what the police report reads, and that's choking. So we're not sure if he, what severity of choking, but I guess on some level, choking is choking.
Right.
Especially if you're 6'8". You know, it's choking at that level is, imagine she's not 6'8", or the other person's not 6'8". Choking is kind of severe. You don't know. You don't know. I don't know if you've ever interviewed Deontay. He's really engaging, intelligent guy, very friendly, very open.
Yeah, we've had him on Leaving the Ring, you know?
No, but I mean, I'm saying just in person, like he's, yeah, we've had him on, but I mean, in person, he's also gigantic, is what I was going to say.
Right.
A damn midget, you know, standing next to him. and he's kind of leaning over, and I am a damn midget, but he made me feel even smaller.
Did he try to choke you?
He didn't try to choke me. He didn't even, we didn't even do a bro hug. Yeah, I think you're right, you know, Brian, in that it's everybody kind of runs with things, and we used to be like a 24-hour news cycle. Now we're about like 24 seconds. You know, it's just I think this case, the Peterson snafu, all that is very indicative of it. The bat phone is ringing. I'll be right back, Dave.
I want to be able to give you another some more airtime here about a story that you've been working on. And fight fans, if you haven't had a chance to check out Brian's work here on LievemanRingRadio.com, you certainly have to go and check it out. investigating piece is really great. But there's a story that you've been on for quite some – a couple of months, right, that you've been working on.
Yep. Oh, 3 months now, actually. And it's on Ike Babucci. Most of you remember him as the – well, the story's called The Greatest Who Never Was.
Right.
And, I mean, the story's sort of broken into thirds. His boxing career, his legal troubles, and his – well, he was batshit crazy. Put it lightly. I mean, this guy, he was absolutely nuts. Probably schizophrenic. And, I mean, they're just little thing after little thing in here. Actually, I had the story all done. Then the reason I'm late to the show today is the prosecutor who handled the case called me. And he didn't remember a whole lot, but he did say Ike sends him a Christmas card every year now, written with, "Can we be friends?"
In blood or
well, they probably don't let guys like him have real pens, and so he's probably using a safety pen. He can't cut himself with it.
Now people are going to go like, okay, crazy in what sense? You know, I mean, like let's get a little bit into the craziness that you've been kind of peeling off the layer by layer of his story.
Yeah, I'll tell some stories here. I spoke to one person that was with his team as a cut man for a bit, who actually said he would talk to an air conditioner.
Wait. So you're telling me you talk to an air conditioner. Hey, I've done that. You know, when you do, "Luke, I am your father, Luke." There's nothing strange about that, bro.
Well, you know, it's 105 degrees. You might be getting a little loopy when you're playing with it, but Christ. Then for a while in the 90s, he wouldn't respond to people if he weren't referred to as Mr. President. He would just ignore you. And
yeah.
I'm just, you know, it's I don't know how you are when people don't address you by whatever you'd like to be, but.
I'd like to be addressed as the greatest Chicano of all time. I have everybody tell me that. If I won't respond to you as well, you know.
Of course. That's what I figured, but.
You know.
But his trainer came back, Curtis Cokes, who's actually up in the Boxing Hall of Fame. He was a welterweight champ in the 60s and 70s. He was saying he didn't think Ike was crazy. He thought it was just a culture difference that he couldn't handle between Nigeria and the U.S. And, for example, the little things like with women. In Nigeria, it's a very male-dominated culture that if you wanted to sleep with a woman, you could grab her and do whatever you wanted to do with her. And the, I guess, adjustment period for him just didn't click when he came to the States.
I would definitely say, yeah, that would get you in a lot of troublesome, you know, here in the States.
You know? Yeah, I mean, I'm not defending what he did because he was quite a character, but
what is he charged for again?
Well, he was originally charged on rape. And, he never actually raped the girl.
Mm-hmm.
He had a call girl in his room, and she wanted to be paid up front, while Ike did not want to do that. His attitude was, go earn your money, I guess. And,
wow.
When they got an argument about that, he got angry, started throwing her around, and put her in a bathroom.
So he went to the pimp mode mentality.
Yeah, I mean, he had his pimp hand strong there. The cops finally came. The girl got out with her pants down, running through the hallway, and Ike locked himself in the closet. And, but he was, like I said, initially charged with rape, which, I mean, for all said and done, he did not rape the girl. He, eventually, down the road, he pled out to attempted sexual assault. But, I mean, that is a big difference.
Right, it is a massive difference. But then again, you know, I'm pretty sure you're going to be able to reveal a lot of what's behind that and a little bit more to tell about that story. I don't want to give away the whole story of what you're writing.
I'm adding way more because I just talked to the prosecutor.
There you go. Well, Brian, hey, man, thanks for calling in and filling us in with Dante Wilder. And I can't wait for the upcoming articles, and we'll get you back on another day.
All right. Take care of yourself, guys.
All right. Take care, brother. Fight fans, you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. We're going to be patching in some fight fans just in a short bit. But I do want to go back with talking about Abner Morris and Ponce de Leon. You know, Abner Morris, to me, is just a guy that just keeps improving and improving, and he keeps impressing. He jumped up in weight. He showed that he has legitimate power. He showed that he's a guy that's just going to go for it. I know at one time a lot of folks didn't think that he was going to, you know, do anything to Nonito Dornier. After I saw that fight, I had spoke to, you know, Gabriel and a few other people, and I was like, listen, I got my money on Abner Morris. I think that if they ever met each other in the ring, I think that Morris stops Nonito Dornier. I think that Morris is a very special fighter. He's got a strong team, and he took out a very good fighter. Ponce de Leon is the guy that gave Broner problems. He gave Gamboa problems. He's given a lot of folks problems. But Morris goes in there and puts him out, you know, sets him up with good power punches, and gets the job done. What more do we need for Abner Morris? What more do we need to say that, yo, this guy is the real deal? He should be headlining the, you know, bigger fights. They should have a much bigger fan base behind him, supporting whatever he does. This guy doesn't take any shortcuts whatsoever. Look at the resume. The resume is absolutely there. How many guys want to see Rigondeaux and Morris go at it? How many guys want to see if Rigondeaux can do what he did to Nonito Dornier to Abner Morris? How many want to find out whether or not Abner Morris can figure out the puzzle to Rigondeaux, who a lot of us are referring Rigondeaux as a Floyd Mayweather, a very difficult fighter to time, very difficult fighter to get a clean shot, and a difficult fighter to find sparring, proper sparring, to be so you're properly prepared. I'm really excited about Abner Morris. That fight, to me, was supposed to be the stiller. It absolutely was, but there was some good fights underneath there. Gabriel Rosado, he put up a really tough fight. He showed that he was there, that he wanted to do his thing. We're waiting for Gabriel Montoya to get back on. He's working on a story as well. He's texting me right now, so he's distracting me. But let's pass in some fight fans here on Leaving in the Ring. Let's talk some boxing. Let's go with area code 860. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's going on, Dave? It's CT.
CT, what's up, brother? How you doing, man?
Pretty good. I'm just enjoying the fights that happened past weekend. Pretty sure you enjoyed them too. I was impressed with Morris. Very impressed. And I was one of the people that said that Nonito would beat him. You know, I'm kind of like with a lot of people, you know, I watched Morris fight, but, you know, going with this fight, he looked very strong, and I agree with you. I think he would give Dornier a very good fight. For the simple fact that Morris, he doesn't come in the he's one of those fighters who adapt well in the ring. He has a different style for each fight. That's what I think that makes him special, you know. now that I rethink about it, yeah, I think he would, you know, adapt to whatever Dornier had for him and, you know, possibly get, you know, whatever he had to do to get it done. I would love to see him fight maybe the winner of Garcia and Lopez. Especially if it was Garcia. Garcia-Morris fight, I think that will be an explosive, you know, hard-hitting, sometimes tactical fight. I think it will be a good fight. Or maybe put him against, if they take the fight with Gary Russell Jr. I was actually talking to somebody about that, which is he's a boxing fan, whatever. But he said that Gary Russell will be too fast for Morris. I don't think so. I think Morris will break him down.
You know the thing about I like the Mikey Garcia fight. I would love to see something like that. The Lopez, yes, I think it makes a lot of sense when in terms of money-wise, you know, it's definitely going to put a lot of cash into the bank there. But what I like about Morris is here's the thing, is that here's a fighter that could have really sat back after hit that tournament, that bantamweight tournament. You know, and you see a lot of fighters, they go up, and then they'll just linger up on top of the hill, and they'll wait and start picking whatever crop is available that they think they're hungry for the moment, which Nonito Donaire did. You know, he was a guy that was just picking, and okay, I'll take a little bit of this, I'll take a little bit of that, but I don't want to try the salsa because it's just too hot. Morris, man, this guy was taking habaneros. I mean, this dude didn't care what he was eating. He ate to eat. And that's what I like about Morris. I like the fact that there was no slowdown in this kid. He's trying to gather up. He's a little bit stingy. Let's just say that. He's that stingy kid that doesn't care. He's going to grab every toy, every candy, ice cream, you name it. And it's all me, 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 me. For boxing fans, that's great. And fighters that want to challenge him or maybe in talks of maybe facing Abner Morris, they're going to have to step it up because they're going to be facing a guy that likes challenges. This guy's not afraid of a good challenge. When they had the Ponce de Leon fight and, you know, there was the fallout of the opponent, the reason they were supposed to be facing, he was a guy that jumped for it. He was like, yeah, I'll take it. No biggie. You know, there was no stopping him. He wanted to try it out. Where other fighters, and I'm pretty sure Gable will agree with me, would have said, scratch their head for a moment and say, nah, let's look for something else.
No, I disagree, Dave. I think all fighters are brave. I'm kidding. Yeah. Man, sorry. I apologize for taking off. Like, one, you know, I wanted to say, like, Foggy Skies, you know, that's his Twitter name, but Brian Fogg, what a great addition to the Leaving the Ring family, dude. That guy is on his game, hell of a reporter. I like that he's fair and balanced, but that he tries to get the three sources. You know, he won't go until he gets that. Dude, like, great find. Like, just to you as the boss of all things Leaving in the Ring, really just yet another hidden gem that you found. Dude, Abner Morris, he's a special fighter, and he's proving that. I mean, he looks like a true 126. You got to credit the strength coach, Luis Garcia, for getting him there. I mean, he looks super ripped, man. He looked in ridiculous shape. Steve's gone out there and done that workout. Luis keeps inviting me to come and get some serious pain at his hands. Yeah, I'm a little afraid of it. Yeah, he keeps inviting both of us, and it's like, I don't know. You know, I got to get over there before I don't live in this town anymore. I got to try him out. But man, Abner looked fantastic. And there were people that didn't think it was a very good fight, and I think there was danger because they were friends. But Abner, that leaping left hook that he added, which I really got to credit. You know, probably it was his fight coach, him, but and his natural ability. But that, I think that's a direct correlation to the things that Luis is working on, that explosiveness, where he just pushed off the back foot, leaps forward with the left hook, and puts down Ponce de Leon. That's not easy to do. And that's a credit to a guy that every fight he tries to implement something new, tries to put it all together. He's really tremendous. They really... I think if you have to look at that criticism of Golden Boy that they haven't developed a top-level fighter. One, you got to credit the early development of and ongoing development of him to Espinoza Boxing. But Golden Boy has done well with Morris, and they're putting him in the right spots. And this is their first guy that I think could be – it's hard to say a featherweight's going to be a superstar, but Abner's got all of it. He's a good-looking guy. He speaks well. He's a family man. And he's a hell of a fighter on top of it all. He's a multi-division champion. Has anybody else had – the run that he's had, the success that he's had in the last few years. I mean, look at him in the beginning of that bantamweight tournament to now, like the fight right before it with Yanni Perez and then the tournament and where he's at now. Huge, huge career. You know,
I'm not a fan of pound for pound, but is he high up on there on anybody's pound for pound list? I mean, exactly.
I know. Yeah, that's a good point because I wanted the same thing. This guy just went through a tournament, still undefeated, already proved himself, and he still hasn't got that respect that I feel he deserves himself, you know?
Here's the thing that I like what you mentioned right now, Gabriel. We said he every fight he adds a little something to the arsenal. But it's just not an added thing to the arsenal. It's an added thing that's going to work for him against the opponent he's facing.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. Yeah, I think that's a great – and he implements it all into his overall skill set. He can box and by saying, like, he can box and brawl, it's like, you know, some guys, when they call it boxing, it's like they're just moving away, and it's there's nothing happening, you know. And they're keeping distance and maybe kind of a crappy jab and some distance game. Now, he can box on his toes and play that game where he's hit and move, and he's very effective at it. That's, I mean, true boxing, turning off punches, getting you at a new angle, taking over the line of attack, all that stuff he's very good at. And then he can also just get in there and flat out fight with you on the inside. He's a very complete fighter. And that's, I guess, you know, some people said, like, oh, you know, my Floyd Mayweather hate is strong or whatever. When I was saying, look, you guys are calling it a masterclass, and it was, but there was no knockout. How is that any different than, like, Vladimir Klitschko? Granted, Pianeta had not accomplished anything near what Robert Guerrero has accomplished. He's not a four-time interim champion in multiple divisions. But, you know, faced with a guy that he's supposed to beat, Vladimir Klitschko generally knocks that guy out. And it's not like his game is brawling. He's a pure boxer who happens to have power. Floyd Mayweather is a pure boxer. He can kind of do it all. He shows that when he gets into exchanges, he can fight up and close. That's quote-unquote brawling in a sense. And he does it quite masterfully without getting hit. But it's all one gear, and there's no – that eighth round was a lot of punishment. And then what? Nothing. It was just boxing, 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 moving, moving, moving. And when he was moving, he was moving. When he was hitting, he was hitting. But there wasn't a lot of make you miss, make you pay. You know, not as much as I would like. It was one shot at a time. So you have to look at that. When you talk about all-time great or the greatest of this era, look at what Abner Morris and Andre Ward have done. Cleaned out divisions, won tournaments, facing world champions from all over the place, and coming out unscathed. Those two guys, I think, should be rated even higher than like a Nonito Donaire, who took out like the older guys in his division. But look what he did when faced with a contemporary. He got schooled. You know, I think, like, we don't do pound for pound. I don't think people really look at the landscape for what it actually is. They count history a little bit too much. It is a what have you done for me lately, but look at the last 3 years of Floyd, Andre, and Abner's careers, and what are you more impressed by?
Exactly. CT, thanks for calling in, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold.
Nice to hear from you again, man. It's been a while. Been too long.
Yeah, thanks. If I could just touch on something real quick and then I'll just get off.
Sure.
I'm with you guys about the Guerrero thing, though. I think the main thing they focused on is Floyd not having them legs back. And with that fight, he showed that he did. So I don't even think they had a plan B, you know? And if I could just touch on one other thing. Honestly, this is only my opinion. And I think if Floyd would have fought on Paul Williams as a welterweight, my opinion, I think, Williams would have beaten him just because you know, the work rate, you know, Paul Williams' length and, you know, just his work rate alone, I think he would have beaten Floyd. But
the Paul Williams that fought Antonio Margarito and the Antonio Margarito that fought Paul Williams would have given Floyd Mayweather hell that night.
Yeah.
Without question. Floyd could not have fought the fight that either of those guys fought and prevailed. Well, he would have it would be tough for him to prevail, having fought the fight that either of those guys fought that night.
But here's my thing, and you can tell me if I'm
wrong. And having to deal with the guys that fought those fights that night. Yeah, go ahead.
But
I'm sorry.
You're absolutely right. Robert really banked on no legs, which, you know, a lot of us thought that his legs were back. I'm not really sure if his legs were back. When you got a guy that's just coming in straight, not doing a whole lot, I think we end up kind of falling in love with what the person's able to do because they're getting away with it. With Miguel Cotto, he gave him angles. So if Robert had got on there Saturday night and give Floyd angles, and Floyd was able to do what he did, then I would sit back and say, yeah, his legs are back. I'm not sure if his legs are back. I got to see him in there with a guy that's going to come in with a game plan and give him angles to try to land shots. Robert was just walking in like he was already in his parade and his hometown, coming forward and just staring. I don't know. It was kind of a weird night, man.
Yeah.
But anyways, I don't want to bag on Robert too much. I'm still a big fan of Robert the Ghost Guerrero, but
we're talking about him professionally. We're not talking about him personally. You know, he's still a good person and high character, and we think the world of him, but they sent endless press releases. They really lobbied for this fight. They fought two fights at the weight. They proved themselves. And it's – I mean, maybe Floyd is that good. I mean, he is. I mean, he obviously
is.
He's 44-0. I mean, you can't take anything away from him. He's absolutely a master. And you watch it, and there's so many things that he does that are so great. The way he uses his hands, not just to punch, but like to gain leverage or to move his opponent really quick where he wants him, then like clock him. And it's lightning quick the way he does it, and so relaxed that you don't even notice it. And the fighter probably doesn't even notice what's happening. He's just a master that we won't. We won't see his like, you know, for a very long time. But at the same time, I mean, where's Will over skill? Where's Jorge Castro over John David Jackson? Like, just trying to get it done and, like, going for broke.
I just really honestly, you know, after that performance.
And he seems so happy, not happy to lose, but okay with losing.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that.
I didn't get that either. And to me, that was just a... To me, it was just the sign that the win was we got the fight. We got the fight. That was the win. Not winning the fight. It was got the fight.
It kind of feels that way. It doesn't feel that way to me with Victor Ortiz. I think he's not satisfied by his experience. You know, I don't know if you saw his during one of the fights, I forget which one, he gave an interview. And they asked him who he favored tonight. And he didn't give an answer. He said, you know, I'm not really a fan of either guy. And he kind of just went on and was like, you know, Floyd Mayweather's, I couldn't understand one thing he said, but he basically just said, like, you know, Floyd Mayweather, pound for pound, best in the world? I don't really think so. And he just wouldn't give it up. But I'd rather have almost that attitude than, well, I got here.
Rather
and
than I have I neither one of those attitudes, to tell you the truth.
Well, yeah, you're right. I'd rather be like, yeah, I won.
I think it's too bad none of these welterweights have these type of Aaron Pryor mentality to him. I think that type of mentality would give Floyd all types of trouble. A fighter like with that type of meaningful
James
and aggressive.
James Kirkland, you know, like at his best, you know. And granted, you can say whatever you want. He's chinny, this and that. He's crazy, or he's not going to fight again, or whatever you want to say about him. I think he will fight again. Like that kind of intensity, if you throw that again, I just want to know what that would look like. You throw that against Floyd, a guy that just won't take no for an answer, and you could clock him, do whatever, and just keep coming.
Right.
That would be interesting to me, but it's, I don't know, I was watching this documentary on Houdini last night, and they were talking about how he promoted himself, and, you know, obviously, he's the guy, he was like the handcuff king, he was like the escape artist. That's what he did, he created that, and that's what he was known for, and but you got to think about it. Like, you know, back then there was no internet or any of that. He'd like kind of create the event. And what you were coming to see was a guy that had basically picked out the handcuffs or whatever he was going to be tied up in. I mean, he did challenge shows, but that was a whole other thing. His basic premise was, you know, all these different devices that he had created that he would put himself into and then before your eyes or behind a curtain get out of and you'd be all excited. And that's kind of Floyd Mayweather at this stage. For these next five fights, he's going to pick the guy that he's going to face, and then he's going to face them. And the trick is convincing the audience that they're watching a death-defying act, when in fact you're watching carefully staged illusion, done by a master, albeit. But that's what you're watching.
I agree. CT, I'm putting you back on hold, brother. Okay, thank you for calling in.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, man.
In about 5 minutes, we're going to have Guy Braub with us, who I'm really excited that he got signed with Boxing 360. His kid's from from Sacramento. Got power in both hands. He was in an awesome fight with Joel Diaz Jr. And he's just distracted. Fight fans, you want to call in, you certainly can, 347-215-7598. Check out Mikey Garcia's playlist that's going to be on Leaving Ring mobile app. So be sure to download the mobile app on your phone, your Android, or your iPhone. Doesn't matter. Get it on there. And we're working on putting up new shows. I know we've been slacking off on that. I've just been crazy busy, man, just trying to get back on track on everything. I haven't even uploaded the website, you know, updated it. I got to do that at least by tomorrow. So I apologize to all our followers and listeners, and but let's talk. Let's go back and talk in boxing here. You know, the big question here is this: Floyd Mayweather talking about September is this, you know, returning back into the ring. Who's the opponent? He wants somebody young and strong and willing to give him a good tussle. Devon Alexander, don't want to see it. Don't want to see Amir Khan. I'm sorry, I just don't want to see neither one of those guys get in there. So who are the names that are left out there? I honestly think, you know what, give it to Canelo. The kid's been calling for it. He's a big kid. He's strong. And I think that's what Floyd Mayweather's gearing up for. You know, September, another big holiday for Mexicans and Mexican-Americans. Do it again. Why not? You on mute?
Apparently, negotiations are underway. I know, I'm all talking on mute. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, there's people say, like, who are these other five opponents? Who would you pick? I mean, everybody that would be worthwhile is kind of at 140, you know? Or, you know, Martinez. But Martinez is a
I was thinking the same thing.
You know,
Martinez looked like crap, but coming.
He looked bad, but it was also, you know, it was a cold, rainy day. He was in front of all his folks. He's coming off surgery, and he came off too soon. I think they'll do it right for this next fight. They're not going to take any chances. But here's the deal. He's got a two-fight deal with HBO, and I believe he might be contractually obligated to face Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. in a rematch. Certainly financially, that makes the most sense for him, but I think that's his Waterloo. But he's tied up, so that's not going to happen. Gennady Golovkin has a deal with HBO, and Floyd is not that interested in facing
no,
him. Why would he face that guy? Kermit Cintron's still fighting.
No, don't want to see that either. You know, I mean, hey, let's patch in our next guest here, and then we'll get back on. And if Fight Fan, do you want to call and give us some suggestions of names who you think Floyd Mayweather should face in September? I still think strongly it should be Saul Canelo Alvarez. I think that fight is going to be the next one. You know, he's a young kid. He's strong. But, you know, even though he's shown some intelligence in there, there's still flaws and corrections that he needs, you know, and on his part. But let's get Guy Robb here with us on Leave the Ring. Guy, you there, brother?
Yes, sir. I'm right here, man.
How you doing, man? It's been a while since I've spoken to you. I went down to the gym, saw you spar, man, and saw you live fighting as well. But you're going to get back in the mix next week on Friday, right?
That's what it is. Next week, Friday night. It's been a little while, and I'm ready to rumble.
Signing with Boxing 360, how did that come about? I mean, what made the decision of going there with that promotional group?
Well, they had an interest immediately after the fight with Joel Diaz. The circumstance was I had just signed with the Goosens. I got released from the Goosens about 6 months later or so, and we just end up getting back in contact and working it out. So, you know, I'm happy. I'm happy Mario expressed to me he was happy and that we plan on getting busy and have big plans for the future.
Now, Boxing 360 has always been known to have a real rigorous schedule for their fighters, you know. I mean, every time you turn around, we see a Boxing 360 fighter on a card. Is that the pace that you guys were looking for? Is that the pace that you want, is to get in the ring as often and as freaking as you can, the way Diaz Jr. was you know, doing himself?
Well, yeah, I mean, for me, it's really a perfect fit. I don't have a big amateur background. I need to stay busy. Northern California is starting to have a lot of shows, and there's a lot of things going on, and I could be part of that. And at the same time, if I stay healthy, stay fight ready, stay ready to go, they're gonna, you know, put me wherever there's fights at. So I'm just, you know, trying to stay busy, get this experience, and climb up this ladder. So yeah, it was definitely something I wanted.
Is the idea is to build you and Sacramento, which used to be a massive, massive fight fan town? Is that what Boxing 360 is thinking of, or are they planning to bring you, you know, to the East Coast, kind of, you know, shuffle you around from state to state? What is the game plan, and what is that you're looking for in terms of being promoted correctly?
Well, you know, I would love to be based right here out of my area where I'm from, and I think what it really comes down to is if I'm ready or not, and I'm planning on staying in the gym, and, you know, I live the right life. So I just, you know, I just got to be ready when the shows come about, and if everything goes smooth, I can catch them all. So, yes, I plan on fighting around here locally, and and some out and about as well.
Do you know anything about your opponent? You're going to be fighting May 17th at the Celebrity Theater in Phoenix, Arizona.
You know, man, his name slips my mind. I think it's Ferreira or something. Here's a New Mexico native. You know, these guys out of New Mexico are fighters, man. So it should be a great show. They're high elevation over there. So you're going to be in shape. I know that. And I don't know a whole lot. That's all I really know. I'm just you know, preparing for anybody, but things always change.
That's interesting. But you look at it regionally. You're like, is he fighting out of Las Cruces? Is that where he's fighting out of, in New Mexico?
Like I said, it slipped my mind because the opponent was switched.
Gotcha.
I don't really remember. The details, but like I said, I'm just getting prepared for a tough fight, because I wouldn't doubt if it switches again or if I don't really know a whole lot about him.
Yeah, you've been speaking of preparing, you've been basically on the shelf since October, right, of last year. What have you been doing in between? I mean, have you just been training, working on new things, healing up?
Yeah, I've been in the gym. I've been training. You know, I've had a couple of fights not go through. You know, so I prepared for a few fights the last couple of months. I've been to a training camp out there in the East Coast with Gary Russell's training camp for his fight he just had in February, or was it late February or early March. So I was out there for 3 weeks. And, yeah, I've been staying active, you know, but it's not the same as being in the ring under the lights. And, you know, that's what I want. So we hooked up with Boxing 360, and now we're both going to get busy.
Talk about that a little bit, your experience with Gary Russell. What's he trained like?
Oh, he's a beast, man. He's a madman. He's something else. They call him the Phenom, you know, that's pretty accurate, you know. His family's great. His dad is great, and it's just different out there in the East Coast, man. You know, I go to the gym, and there's 20 people in there. Some heavyweight, some kids, some middle. You know, they're all southpaw. Every single one of them.
Really?
Yes. I guess that's how they train, and that's I don't know, but every single one of them.
And not like natural southpaws, but like everybody puts their strong hand up front southpaws?
Well, I'll tell you what, they sure look natural southpaw, but I got to believe that they're not all. But yeah, I guess
how interesting.
Just how it works out there, I guess. I don't know.
What a trip. And, you know, it's weird because, like I started in Sacramento, my boxing experience. I started training at the Washington Neighborhood Center with Don Conley. And when I lined up, and Don's like old school, you know, he taught like Tony Lopez, Loretta Garza. And I lined up as a southpaw, and he wouldn't let me fight that way. He made me go orthodox. Like the old school, they would never let you do that. And now it seems like there's a lot more southpaws out there, and then it's more acceptable. People kind of get this.
Yeah, it's very common now. You see guys left-handed, right-handed, and they're switching their stance up to have their strong hand up front. I don't know. I don't know. I guess whatever makes you feel confident in there.
Do you feel, you know, with the year off, or, you know, all this time off, not a full year, but you're settled in at featherweight, but do you think, at least you're listed that way on BoxRec, where do you feel you're going to land? Where is it going to be your best weight?
Well, you know, I feel strong at featherweight. I've been making the weight, feeling comfortable, and you know, I'm not really, like, dieting. I'm just eating healthy foods, you know what I'm saying? And you know, I'm going to sleep, and I'm eating salads, and I'm laying down, going to sleep, and I'm just thinking about hurting somebody because, like I was telling these other people I was interviewing, once your diet goes green, man, you get mean. So it's not. I feel comfortable at featherweight right now. I feel eventually I'll probably grow into a bigger weight class, But right now, this is pretty pretty good.
You know, when I watched you spar, you know, I think we talked about this too. It was like you have one mode. Going in the East Coast, did you change that mode? Or did they tell you to change that mode? Or were you just Guy Rob? You went in there and... Because, I mean, when I saw you spar, dude, you were like... It was like watching you fight just in the ring, you know? Your punches were solid. You were looking to take the guy's head off. How was that with Gary Russell?
Well, that's kind of why they brought me out there for, is to do that. However, the guy is so versatile that, you know, I had to kind of... You know, I had to try to strategize a little bit, but that's what they brought me down there for, is for that particular style. And, you know, I just try to give them what they asked for. You know, here and there they'd ask, you know, can you do this, can you do that? And, you know, yeah, everything worked out great. You know,
that's interesting. Like,
I consider myself a boxer puncher, but I like to fight. So if I feel like, you know what I'm saying, if I feel that coming forward and being an animal in there is the right strategy, then that's what I'm gonna do, because that's what I enjoy. But yeah, you know, as I get more fights, people are gonna see a whole lot more versatility.
You know, when I went down there, it was still fresh, the loss to Diaz. And,
yeah,
man, you had so much fire in your eyes. You were like, I want this rematch. Was this part of maybe into the deal with Boxing 360? Are we going to see a rematch? Or is that just done and over with? It's not going to happen, and you're just moving on?
No, I think it is definitely a possibility. Everybody wants to see it. I would love to redeem my loss. And I think that, you know, it'd be a lot more lucrative for everybody involved if we, you know, kind of got a little further in our career, you know, on a bigger stage, and got a little bit more pop, you know, a little bit more popular, and just like I said, on a bigger stage. And, you know, it's whatever. I think, you know, I think that's definitely a possibility.
Of all the guys you've worked with, getting back to the Gary Russell stuff, I just find that interesting when you get a guy gets to work with a top level guy like that.
How fast is he? Let me ask you that.
You just read my mind. How fast is he on a scale of everybody you've worked with and Gary Russell?
Oh man, he's that I've experienced, he's fastest. And the dude got power as well. The dude's strong. So yeah, he's pretty damn fast and pretty damn strong, I'd have to say.
How long did it take to kind of adjust to that? I mean, had you dealt with it before, and how do you deal with a guy that's just, because he's not just fast of hand, he's just overall fast, like fast of foot.
Yeah,
he's quick, you know, his reflexes. How do you deal?
Well, you know, there's some rules to the game. You know, you use the jab to slow down the speed and interrupt the rhythm and combination, but we there to fight, you know what I'm saying? So that's what's gonna happen, is you gotta fight. You know, you can't be worried about this, worried about that. And if you do, then I don't know, you might have a little problem on your hands.
That's why I became like a major fan of yours, man, because, you know, I saw that warrior mentality you have, where you want to get in and you want to handle your business. And you even told me that, you know, with that fight with Diaz, you let the best of that fight get to you. You know, you got hit, and you're like, "Oh, I got to get mine back."
Yeah.
When you're in there with a Russell, though, are you measuring them out in your mind? Like, okay, there's a strong possibility I might meet this guy down the line. What's going through your mind?
Well, yeah, it's definitely a big possibility. We're at the same weight as of right now. I don't know what his plans are. And as far as my plans are, I'm planning on campaigning right here. So, yeah, you know, it was nice to get in there and, you know, kind of gauge myself and see where I'm at. And, you know, because I believe you should be going for a world title shot this year sometime. I think maybe he could have last year, but this year, I'm pretty sure he's going to be grabbing one of them belts.
As for yourself, where do you see yourself by the end of this year? Is there a clear plan, this fight, and then get on TV, or
I don't know exactly what my promoters have planned. I plan on getting staying busy as much as possible. You know, I want to move into these eight-round fights and get a bunch of them. And you know, we're just taking it one step at a time. And I just, like I said, I just want to stay active and get these belts under, get these fights under my belt.
You're going to be training out of Sacramento in the same gym.
Yeah, I'm still out of Sacramento with Ray Woods at Golden State Bloodhound. Yeah.
Cool.
All right, brother. Well, man, hey, thanks for coming back on. Tell Ray, man, we said what's up, and wish you all the best on Friday next week.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Right, hey, our pleasure, man. Good luck to you.
Bye-bye.
There we go. Guy Robb, young prospect, featherweight.
Good guy.
Really good guy. I mean, guy's got power in both hands. Real tough customer.
I love that. Just, we're going to fight. That's what's going to happen. You know? It's just awesome. I love that.
A lot of promise in him, too, you know?
For sure.
When I went out there to go see him, you know, you go out there and you want to observe what's in their eyes, their motion, body, you know, their body language. And I tell you, this kid didn't, you know, he didn't miss a beat. His eyes had fire. His body language in the ring was, you know, like when you get into a war the way he was with Diaz, your body becomes reluctant. We saw that. We've seen that with a lot of fighters. They're kind of hesitant of getting hit again. They don't want to mix it up the way they normally would do from the previous. But this kid got in there, and it was like give all, get all type of mentality. And I sat there and I said, this kid has that warrior mentality. He's got a chip on his shoulder. Ray Woods told me, he goes, he reminds me of Diego Kraus a lot of ways. His late son. He said he's got a chip on his shoulder, and he's gonna take it far. He's gonna go there. And they really felt strongly that the fight will stop premature. And it wasn't like, hey, I'm just saying this to convince myself. I really felt it. You know what I mean? Saw it in this kid's eyes. He was like, no, they stopped it on me. I could have kept going. I wanted to keep going. So I'm really excited about Guy Robb, man. I'm happy that he signed with Boxing 360. Boxing 360 is a young promotional company, but they know talent and they know how to match their fighters. They don't match them too soft and they don't match them too hard. Talking about matching, Donnell Livingston at 168 gave a hell of an effort doing what he had to do against a Money Mayweather fighter. But I think that it's safe to say 160 is just not his weight division. He needs to go back down to 160.
The problem is that he just, you know, I don't know if he can lose the weight. You know, I think the fight was at 165, and that was, you know, that it's that to get to 60 or 54 for him, I don't know. He's kind of a tweener. I thought he fought a good fight. You know, he just was physically overmatched, I felt.
I know, you were telling me that. And I got to be honest with you.
And Arias was actually very good. I mean, he was so active. You know, I don't know, but go ahead. No,
really quick, because I didn't see this text. But Guy Robb is on Twitter, so you can find him at @Guy_Robb. So follow Guy Robb. You can be updated with what he's got going on. And if you haven't seen Guy Robb in the ring yet, you gotta take a look at the kid. I'm telling you, even with the loss, I was impressed.
I thought it was a perfect loss for where they were at, because it was actually, you know, normally Showbox is about getting like guys at like 15, maybe 20, you know, they meet and then dude goes on to title shot, other guy goes and rebuilds. But these were very young fighters, very early on in their career. Sorry for the banging. I'm trying to figure out what to do with my cord. So where they were at, we didn't need to see a clean knockout. We saw these two young guys go at it, and we saw a clear winner was about to happen, fight over, save a career. We both will enjoy both of these guys a lot longer because that fight was stopped.
Right.
Yeah.
and this was how good of a fight it was, that a lot of us were sitting back saying, we want to see this again. You know?
But when it, well, yeah, but when it matters, you know, when there's
when
like
matters,
a title
exactly.
on the line. Yeah. So I think, and Diaz, you know, I think he's already kind of outgrown the weight class, but they'll meet again, I would hope.
I think,
so, yeah.
You know, but, and Guy Robb, he's got wide shoulders. He's still young. I think he's. I think I believe he's going to move up as well. Not anytime soon, but definitely will make that move up. But going back with Darnell Livingston, and I remember you telling me that you did think that he looked good. But you know, I got to say this. You know, and we've known Darnell for quite some time, and he's been on our prospect watch, along with like Dante Wilder, a lot of these guys that we see. Danny Garcia was on prospect watch, and here's my thing. Here's my rant about Darnell Livingston. Darnell Livingston, okay, is Darnell Livingston to me is still a guy that has not figured out what his style is. He's his worst enemy, in my opinion. Watching that fight, I really did see a guy that was having a bit of problem with his balance. Maybe it was because of the guy was a, you know, Aris was bigger than him, but I just really had the feeling that Darnell still hasn't figured out what kind of a fighter he wants to be. Yes, I give him A for effort of credit getting in there because, you know, he was put on the shelf by Boxing 360. And being said that he was put on the shelf is because he had lost his last two fights. And granted, boxing is a business. Promoters get into boxing to make money. And he lost those two. It was I don't think they the confidence has been kind of faltered there now because of those losses. Now they have to look at, okay, where do we go with him? And Darnell now I think it's fair to say, I'm pretty sure he's not going to like to hear this. Just like I know the Guerrillas are not going to like what we were saying earlier on the show, but the reason why we were called leaving in the rings because we're going to leave it there. But Darnell's an opponent. It's just strictly an opponent now, and that's something that has to take. There's got to be realism put into his mind that you're an opponent, and the only way you're going to get out of the opponent category is by winning fights and getting yourself out of it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, man, that's tough.
And you could be, you know, you could be pissed at your promoter. You could, you know, et cetera, but at the end of the day, a promotional company's got to make their money, and they got to do whatever amount of money they invested in you, they got to make it back. It's a cold reality. We don't like it as fight fans. We don't like to see our fighters, you know, just kind of thrown out there to the wolves. But the chance of a fighter getting himself out of that category is by
Winning.
It's plain and simple.
I would say that it's accurate that he hasn't figured himself out in the ring. I think he's still a guy that thinks too much. In those moments where he doesn't think and he just reacts and does, he does great. I think he has all the tools. I think he hits hard. I think he hits his technique is very good. He pays attention to all that stuff. I think he needs to keep his hands higher. He gets caught on the top of the head a lot. Doesn't move his head enough. He's got good footwork, but he's a little stiff in the upper body, so he gets caught with stupid stuff that he could probably block. If he's not going to move his head, you got to block. But yeah, he's stuck. He's like that kid in you know, Bad News Bears. You know, I'm stuck between my Vita Blue and whatever guy and my Ty Cobb. You know, or wherever I forget the name of the pitchers because I freaking hate baseball. But remember, the guy is stuck there and he can't throw a pitch because he doesn't know who to imitate. And the guy says, "Why don't you just, you know, be yourself?" And Darnell hasn't figured out who Darnell is. I think he has the tools. You know, there's guys with losses. Gabe Rosado is a guy with losses that is still of high quality. That I won't. I mean, I guess he's kind of an opponent because he allows himself. He does just enough to lose. And Darnell kind of did just enough to lose. He could have. I will say this for him: if that fight was 8 rounds, I give him a good shot to win. I really do. I thought he was the fresher guy at the end of the fight. I thought he kept his wits about him, and I thought Arias was kind of fading a little bit. This was a new test for him going past 4 rounds. But Arias, man, he also is a guy that goes all in. He throws hard shots.
All in, but man, that goes back.
combinations and just really took charge of that fight. And that's what Danielle doesn't do, because Arias knows who he is, or at least knows who he wants to be. Danielle doesn't. It took him getting punched in the face and knocked down to figure out who the hell he is. And,
well,
you know,
it goes back to the category of being an opponent. I mean, if Danielle had been winning, for one, we probably wouldn't have seen him at 165. Or if he was winning and he couldn't make the weight, we could have seen him at 165. But the bout probably would have swayed with the rounds being longer in his favor. But when you're the opponent, it's not an even playing field. You know, it's normally geared up for you to lose. The blue corner normally loses. I mean, the red corner normally loses to the blue corner. That's kind of how it works. You know what I mean?
And Linus is helping me out with it was Louis Tiant. I'll probably screw up how to pronounce the name. Quoting the Bad News Bears and Breaking Training. Yeah, no, I agree with you. And it's funny. Linus is one of our more vocal Twitter guys. He said Danielle got jobbed with the TKO loss on the low blow last time and a shaky TMT decision this time. And what you're saying is kind of goes in line with that's what happens to opponents. You put yourself in those weird positions, you let shit like that happen, all of a sudden you got three losses in a row. You lose to a guy that you're supposed to beat. That's the first loss. You got to draw with a guy that you should have beat. You know, you got to do enough, take charge in that ring. It's about, you know, ring generalship is the reason why they named that first on the criteria, you know, because that's what it's all about. It's going in there and demanding respect. And if you don't get it, then you take it.
Here's another point too, man. And you know, if you ever go in the ring and you ever spar or you know, you ever train and you know, when I used to go in there, I had a moment like a whole year, all right, where I wanted everything to be picture perfect. So rather than letting my hands go, I made sure the jab was just picture perfect, and it was. But I was getting tagged. I wasn't able to do the things that I needed to do. I wasn't able to counter. I wasn't able to cut the ring off. I wasn't able to slip punches. Because whatever punch I threw, I needed it, in my mind, for some reason, I needed it to be perfect. I honestly see that with Donald Livingston. He struggles with that. He wants to be picture perfect. And I think that if he decides just to let it go, just let it go. Just be you. Don't worry about the nicknames. Don't worry about having T-shirts. Don't worry about bringing fans. Worry about letting your hands go and finding who you are in that ring so that you can get the W's. Because that's where, honestly, that's where it counts, winning in that ring. Everything else will fall behind.
And I wouldn't get caught up in thinking about the losses too much or why they happened.
Exactly.
You just got to move forward. Like, that's all just like dead weight. You know, the past is kind of dead weight, and all you can do is learn from it. But if you let it weigh you down, then it's pointless. You know, you just got to learn from it. I hope he does. I think he has the tools to do it. I've always believed in Danielle. And it isn't, contrary to what some people will try to insinuate, it isn't because he's with Boxing 360 and I'm being partial to them. We like Danielle. And we always have.
We had him on numerous times before he was even signed to Boxing 360.
I think before I was even on this show. So, and I was introduced to him by this show.
He's a great kid.
He's
a great kid, you know. I mean, it sucks to see that he's an opponent. He's the cousin of Andre Ward. He was a very decorated amateur fighter. But you know, all that sounds great. All that should have some meaning and weight behind it. But at the end of the day, that's not going to help you when you get in that square ring to do your job. Fight fans, you want to call in, 347-215-7598. I'll slow it down for you really quick. 347-215-7598. Or you can email us at leavingtheringatgmail.com. Be sure to download our mobile app so you can listen to all the exclusive content that we throw up on there. We haven't done it in recent. Sorry about that. I apologize, but we will very, very soon. It's been crazy busy, man. And, you know, all these fights, too, I got to tell you, I want to, you know, yeah, we're going to be calling Steve Kim in right now here on Leaving Ring. Get some breaking news from Steve. You know, every time he comes on, he educates, and he also he's able to throw what's in the works, what he's investigating, or what he has in line is in the story. So, Fight Fans, you want to call in? You certainly can. 347-215-7598. We're going to find out what Steve Kim, who he wants to see, who he thinks should be the next face across the ring from Floyd Mayweather Jr. And like I said, we're still trying to figure out what other name. We threw after Canelo. I'm not sure what anybody else. I mean,
I am available in September. I'm just letting you know.
I think Radio Raheem should be the next guy. I think.
Wow. Yeah.
Let him get up there.
He does have reach. You know, I would like to see that.
Yeah, he's tall.
He's got power. I've seen him in the gym. He's a very strong guy.
Not just power with his words in his interviews. He's got powers in those fists of his.
Oh yeah, no. He's got some funky punches. And we actually were talking recently about maybe turning pro together and doing a fight against each other. We were just trying to figure out what weight we would meet at. I mean, he thinks he can make 160. I think I can bulk up to at least like 155. I could get to 160. You know, I'd have to eat a lot. Because I'm like 140, but we're talking about doing it. I don't know. We'll see. I'll keep you posted on that. We kind of just both want the experience, you know?
Right.
So I think it's kind of funny about Max Boxing. It's a unique website in that. Like I wrote about it this week. Like when I criticize Floyd, people will assume, oh, you don't like black people, you're a racist. I do get some of that from people, but you know, I don't know what the deal was with, you know, Raheem getting no credentials, you know. Max Boxing is kind of like the colors of Benetton. We got, you know, a white guy in Canada. I think he's white. I actually don't know what he is. I Chihuahua is our webmaster. I have no idea what he is in Canada, an alien from the planet Boxing. We got Steve Kim, who's the co-owner of a site, is Korean. We got a British guy, you know, Robert Waterman in the UK. Me, a Mexican American. Our editor is African, or is a Native American, Coyote Duran. And then we've got an African American on camera person in Radio Raheem. We're the freaking colors of Benetton, you know. If we were going to be racist, we sure picked a weird website to do it on.
Yeah, definitely. let's pass in some five fans here really quick on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with area code 856. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? Nope. Okay, let's move it down the line. We got a couple callers from 510, so I'll just throw out your area code and then the first three numbers of your phone, and then you can tell me what you want to talk about here on Leaving the Ring. Area code 510-378. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Yo, what's up, guys? How's it going, man?
Doing good, man. Who are you talking to here?
What's up, man?
Yo, what's up? This is Anthony, man. I just want to call in. I missed the first half of the show, so I didn't get you guys' thoughts on Mayweather and Guerrero. But I just want, you know, real quick to touch on it. I thought Guerrero looked real good the first couple of rounds, and then he just really stopped moving his head. He was moving his hands, but he kind of was just sitting there, and, you know, Floyd was just teeing off with those lead right hands. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the deal was. I don't think he was getting maybe the proper instructions in the corner. There was a lot of people over here, and I haven't rewatched the fight since then, so... but he just kind of lost. I mean, what'd you guys think, man?
Those right hands. I said this a long time ago. I said, you know, Robert's got a great chance, but the one thing that he had to work on was to avoid the right hand. And Floyd is one of the best in the business throwing that right hand. When he gets in his rhythm, it's hard to break. And I think that's what happened. You know, we've seen Robert in the past get clipped with those right hands from other fighters. He just couldn't figure it out. After that third round, I just saw a blank face on Robert the Ghost. You know,
yeah.
I, you know, I said it earlier. Robert did look like a ghost. They looked like there was no more soul in him in that fight.
I gave him the sixth. I thought he kind of showed some effort. He kind of showed a little bit of bounce and like just kind of, all right, I'm just going to start throwing some punches kind of half-heartedly but or like half speed. But, you know, I'm going to throw rapid shots and kind of up the tempo. But he never really pushed Floyd. I mean, I think you've got to really – to beat Floyd, you're going to have to break Floyd. And Robert didn't even, like, scratch the – you know, didn't even scratch the paint. And to me, like, watching the fight, I've watched it twice now. Like the third round, it's like jogging – you know, the first two rounds is kind of like jogging next to Floyd. And then the third round is like, okay, let me see if you can, like, go a little bit faster. And he ups the tempo. Just a little bit, just his movements, everything, a little bit of punches start coming a little more frequently. And he kind of ramps it up just to see where Robert is at. And Robert doesn't really respond. And, yeah, I think he was – it was kind of like what they describe about the problem when Michael Jordan – playing with Michael Jordan and coaching him, getting the other players to stop watching how great he is and actually interact and like pass the ball and receive the ball, demand the ball from him. And with guys like with Floyd, and Tarver talked about this in beating Roy Jones. Buddy McGirt in training him talked about it, and that he's so fast, you'll just watch him. And I think he talked about the Jordan thing, that you just kind of get mesmerized. Instead of just punching with him and letting your hands go and seeing where they take you, that's what Robert didn't do. He didn't venture into the darkness, into the wilderness of wondering how to beat Floyd Mayweather and following defining a blueprint. He didn't want to do that. He just kind of was content. He hoped he was old, and then he wasn't, and it was like, okay, and then what? And that's just the media. I don't read a lot of writers. We should call Steven because he's waiting for us. But Steve is one of them. You know, guys that just fall into what the press releases give you. Oh, is Floyd old? Ooh, I don't know. Is he going to be old this time? Come on, man. He's been resting for a year, chilling. No, he's not going to get old. He's going to be fine.
You got to make him old.
Yeah, you got to make him old. You got to go beat him down. Like Rob, Guy Rob said, you know, there's going to be a fight. That's what's going to happen. Nobody but Cotto decided to do that. It takes intelligence and a well-thought-out game plan. Where am I going to hit him and why? You know, and I'm going to keep doing that over and over again and get results. Guerrero just – I don't know what he did. And so it's –
I'll say it again. Their win was when they got the fight. That was it.
Yeah. See it again. I didn't see it the first time. You know, that's what it felt like.
Oh, man. All right, Anthony, thanks for calling. We're just on hold.
Thanks, man.
Right on, man. Keep up the good work, guys. Y'all, this is a live show, man.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, man.
Let's call in Steve Kim here on Leaving the Ring. And let's get his take of what's going on in the boxing world. So if you're ready, let's get the K-9.
I have no idea. So I'm glad someone's going to be here to tell me. I'll tell you, I apologize for disappearing during the show. I was kind of getting an update on a story. I told Dave what it is, but I got two sources. I need three, and then I can tell you. But
Mr. Steve Kim, how you doing, brother?
I am doing well, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you for coming on again here on Leaving the Ring Radio.
Anytime. We got to do it more often. So what's the word, guys?
Hey, listen, fill us in with Brandon Rios and Manny Pacquiao. What are the negotiations? Where is it going to take place? What's the word?
Well, it's very simple. I mean, it was a kind of a long, protracted situation. It was finally resolved early this week, and they announced it was going to be Brandon Rios. About 3-4 weeks ago, guys, it looked like Alvarado had the inside track. I know that Mike Alvarado and his manager, I think, had a scheduled trip up to Las Vegas that took place. They met with Bob Arum. But I think a couple things have happened. I think, number one, his right hand, which they went through a procedure after the Rios fight on March 30th, there was not 100% word that they were going to be available. And, in fact, Henry Delgado, his manager, admitted to me that he didn't know if his fighter would even fight the rest of the year. So I think when you invest into a pay-per-view show, you need to have an assurance that both dance partners are going to be out there on the floor, and I don't think that really figured into play. That equation simply did not work. Secondly, I think Brandon Rios was the more ideal physical fit for Manny Pacquiao. He's a little bit smaller, he's not as tall, and he doesn't employ a lot of movement. And I think that was also a key factor, that they wanted to make sure that if Manny's going to take a real fight, and I think this is a real fight, it has to be a real fight within a certain style. And as you saw in the rematch on March 30th, one thing Alvarado can do when he wants to is really use his legs.
Yeah.
Use lateral movement and run guys into their right hand. While Brandon Rios, as rough and physical as he is, it's a very monotone style. There's no special effects, as they say. You know where he's going to be. You don't need a GPS unit to find him. And when you put that together, Brandon Rios is a recognizable name. He usually is in very good fights, and he's also under the top-ranked banner. The money came together after a while, so at that point, they pulled the trigger on the fight. So on November 23rd, we're going to have a pay-per-view from the Venetian in Macau. And the intrigue to me, guys, is that Brandon Rios may not be a true welterweight where this fight is. We don't know where Manny Pacquiao is physically or psychologically, and we're going to find that out very early. That's, to me, the intrigue.
That's why I kind of liked the fight when it was made, because I was like, okay, here's a guy that you can consider Brandon Rios a one-trick pony. He doesn't really do a whole lot. He just comes forward. You know what you're going to get. You know, it's going to be the repetitive dinner dish, spaghetti, all the time with Brandon Rios. But the power factor, the guy that can he throws uppercuts, he throws, you know, some straight punches. I'm sitting back wondering, where Manny's at? Physically, mentally, is he going to crumble like a Fernando Vargas? As soon as he gets touched, he falls apart. I want to find out. And I thought that bringing Brandon Rios into the mix, we're going to find out a little bit what happens when Manny gets touched by a guy that can't does have some pop.
The thing that's overlooked in Manny Pacquiao's last outing was that he was actually, I think, on his way to stopping Marquez.
Right.
Honestly, if he doesn't hang that curveball, I think he stops Marquez in 7-8 rounds. In fact, I thought that was the best version of Manny Pacquiao I had seen in about 2.5 years. And it was the most that he was touching Marquez consistently with hard punches since the first round of the first fight. And I think the way he went down, which certainly cannot be overlooked, I think has clouded the fact that Manny actually looked very good that night outside of the ending. So here's what I think is going to happen. In the first round, you know what Brandon Rios is going to do. He's not going to deviate. He's not going to stick and move. And the first time he hits Manny Pacquiao significantly, either on the chin or to the body, either Manny's going to shatter in 1,000 pieces and it's the beginning of the end, or Manny's going to bump his gloves together like he does and ask Brandon Rios to bring on some more. And at that point, we can breathe a little bit easier in terms of where Manny Pacquiao goes from this period.
I think it's a really interesting fight. And I mean, do you think he's ever going to fight here ever again? Do you think this is the kind of European tour? So I think Sugar Ray Robinson just, you know, heading off doing 9 fights in Europe and making some coin off of his name. Do you think that's where we're at? Or do you think if he beats Rios solidly and shows that he's really an elite-level guy, will he come back to Vegas? Does Mayweather come back into play on some level?
Gabriel, when I talked to Mike Conn, the advisor of Manny Pacquiao, on Monday afternoon as this story broke, I asked him that question. I go, have we seen the last of Manny Pacquiao in the United States? And he basically said in his own way, never say never, but most likely, yeah. Because until the tax situation is resolved, and last I checked, he's always going to have to pay income taxes and federal taxes out here in the United States at a very high clip. I think there's a possibility that his days as a fighter that performs in America have gone past him. And I've also been told by other sources that the Venetian in Macau, the organizers up there, are going to help make up some of the economic shortcomings that may exist from losing pay-per-view buys in America. Because that is going to be a logistical problem that Aram has made very clear, that if I have this fight in Asia, I know for a fact that many of the media members that are usually there for 3 to 4 or 5 days in America in Las Vegas at the media center at the MGM Grand, pumping out one story or another about this fight, you could probably count that number and discount it by at least, 75%? Because let's face it, most newspaper budgets don't allow for a lot of writers to travel these long distances anymore. That's not a cheap trip, although Top Rank is trying to charter a sponsored airplane to take as many people as possible. But I think you would lose at least a third of your pay-per-view purchases. That's a significant amount. But I've been told that the casino themselves will help make up for some of that difference. And if the difference isn't that great, yeah, Gabe, I do think we may have seen the last of Manny Pacquiao in the United States for at least the time being.
Today it broke that, and you and I talked privately about it or texted, that USADA would be doing the testing, but that's not what it seemed like heading in. Do you have any light that you can shed on that? I have some, but I don't have my third source. I'm kind of not ready to go yet.
No, I really don't. You would know more than I do, but I will say this. Based on some of the comments of Bob Arum and Top Rank in regards to USADA, for them to use it, I think they'd be going back on their words. I really do. I thought they had a very strong commitment to VADA. And when you use USADA, just based on their history in boxing, to me, you're taking the easy way out. You're actually trying to say that you're doing the most you can to eradicate illegal drug use in boxing, but you're not. And so it'll be interesting to see where this ends up, because Bob had told you, I think, on the record a couple of times, Gabe,
He sought me out to say it. Yeah.
Right, that they want to use VADA. And my question is, did Manny Pacquiao basically said, I'm not doing that. Let's go with the path of least resistance. So,
what I can guess at, I guess, it's an educated guess, is that no, I think that somebody threw in USADA into the thing, but I'm not sure exactly who
Ariza?
At this point, who I can say.
Sorry,
it's me. It might be Ariza. It might be, I don't know. But I'm not even sure if Memo Heredia is actually still working with Brandon Rios. There's a lot of kind of moving parts I'm trying to figure out. I would say that it's kind of like the Rigo situation. This would be my guess, is that somebody is saying they want USADA in addition to VADA, and somebody like Bob is saying basically, all right, go for it, pay for it. I'm not. And so I think it's in the contract maybe that you can do both, but one of them will get done, I think. I'm not sure if it's VADA or not. I know there'll be testing for the fight. I'm pretty sure it's not USADA, I guess.
I think people are panicking, and I didn't even realize any of this until I read my Twitter timeline. I traveled around to a few gyms today out here in L.A. To kind of see, you know, what was going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then I started hearing this, and I was surprised because I always thought USADA was going to be affiliated with Golden Boy, and VADA would always kind of be top rank, kind of like Showtime and HBO. So we're going to see. Again, I think people are jumping to conclusions, but again, I'll say it. If they go with USADA, based on the comments that Bob Arum made himself not too long ago, he would be going back against his own word.
Yeah, that's why I kind of, you know, reminded him that on Twitter today. I know Bob doesn't check his Twitter feed, but Top Rank probably does. And just to get it out there, like, wait a minute, this is what you said to me. So you can't, you know, don't make me use that old tired phrase against you, you know, because I know the context. We both do. It was in a bar. He's joking about fights. Not, it wasn't in a courtroom about yesterday. I was lying today. I'm telling the truth. But what are the things going on? Let me ask you this. What are your thoughts about, everybody's panicking about the pay-per-view numbers with Mayweather, with Mayday. They're kind of, everybody's screaming Mayday at this point. Do you think it's too early to do that? I mean, it's the first fight of six. They're going to have to spend a little money to kind of make some money and build the Mayweather brand, don't you think?
You know what? I think the actual numbers of purchases is fine if you believe some of the industry sources. And let's say it didn't hit a million. You know, Mayweather's never said I do a million every time out. What he says is that I'm the biggest pay-per-view franchise in boxing. And I asked these people one question. Could anyone else have carried Guerrero as the B-side to this many pay-per-views, whether you believe the 850 figure or the 900? I'd say no. And by all accounts, that number is very good. I think people have to understand one thing. You take away Pacquiao, Mayweather, De La Hoya, and Mike Tyson, the overwhelming majority of pay-per-view shows at that level don't go beyond 300,000 to 400,000 buys. I mean, you're in a very, very high, rare stratosphere. The issue is this, that in those pay-per-views, no one has ever really guaranteed 32.5 million. See, that's where your problem is. And this is a business, okay?
Right.
I don't know if Golden Boy, Mayweather Promotions, Showtime, and everyone else involved looks at this as a lost leader, but this is a corporate entity with shareholders. And if you do two fights a year that lose $10 million, like some are reporting or speculating, that's $20 million a year. That doesn't seem like good business unless Les Moonves, the head of CBS and Showtime, says, I don't give a damn, but this is about branding and this is about taking over boxing led by Floyd Mayweather. I think, again, the numbers are fine, but I thought one of the problems in this deal or a potential pratfall of the pact made by Showtime with Mayweather is twofold. Number one, that they guaranteed Mayweather all his money. I thought that was a point of contention, and I heard that's when HBO walked away from the deal, because if you're going to guarantee that much of an amount, over $30 million, well, there's the impetus not to fight anybody then. The bottom line is whether he fights Devin Alexander, Amir Khan, Dave Duenas, Steve Kim, or Gabriel Montoya, guess what? That's $32.5 million he's guaranteed. So when people say, now Mayweather has to fight somebody, I actually point out, no, he doesn't. He could fight the exact same caliber opponent and be guaranteed $32.5 million. The second part of the deal that I found problematic is the fact that Showtime doesn't necessarily have a right of first refusal as it relates to opponents or approval rights. What they have is a pre-approved list. and you can pretty much gather what the names are on that pre-approved list. If anyone between 140 and 147 that is in the Al Heyman Golden Boy umbrella. So
and probably some select 54s like Alfredo Angulo.
Right, so that's where the problems may lie. So, again, this deal on the surface looked very good, but I think we have to kind of see where it's going. And you're right, we should practice a little bit of vigilance and patience as to see where this goes, but I get the sense, and just talking to everyone involved, that there is a strong sense of urgency that we have to make the Canelo fight to make this deal good early on. Guys, I was there in San Antonio 3 weeks ago. Canelo Alvarez is not settling for only, and I use that in quotes, only $3 million. I think he comes to that bargaining table, and I think he can rightfully say to Floyd Mayweather and Golden Boy and Showtime, you know my numbers, you know the ratings I do, I want $10 million right off the top. So now with Floyd's guarantee, which may only be a minimum guarantee, because I cannot imagine a scenario where Floyd fights Guerrero and then moves up to face Canelo for the same amount of money. Okay, that common sense would dictate that to you. So then you got a fight now that's, in essence, off the top, before the undercard, before the marketing costs or anything else, might be a nut of $45 million. And at that point, you can do the math and divide the number of pay-per-views, cut that in half, because the other half goes to the cable providers. And I think you have to sell in upwards of 1.678 million. I haven't done the math myself. And I'm just saying, yes, Canelo Alvarez is a very, very large entity himself. He's now a marquee attraction. But my question is this. Is the difference between Robert Guerrero and Canelo Alvarez as the B-side, is it really worth 700,000 pay-per-view buys? I'm not so sure it is.
Oof. Wow. Yep.
It's interesting just to – why I want to – I'm curious about, you know, and want to be patient is say – because I think Errol Spence is going to do very well. I think Joseph Diaz Jr. is going to do very well. I think they're going to get belts. Out of all these Mayweather – this stable that we're kind of rolling out, Luis Arias, Jay Leon Love, is there going to emerge one or two superstars and it ultimately is kind of worth it to develop all these guys while – you know, this is almost like the same thing that De La Hoya did when he was building Golden Boy Promotions, fighting a pay-per-view, and it was like their golden parachute every year. But it seems it's a very concerted effort because they're all, you know, they're all under one roof. Mayweather Promotions is set first over Golden Boy. Would you think that's accurate? That's what's happening? Is that we're seeing the building of the Mayweather like almost UFC brand on Showtime?
You know, I don't know. And the two guys that you mentioned, Errol Spence and Joseph Diaz, they're not with Mayweather. Remember, they're specifically with Golden Boy Promotion.
But they're also with Heyman, right?
Yeah, they're with Heyman, but that's not necessarily one and the same. And here's another issue with Mayweather Promotions. Are they licensed yet?
Nope. That's
okay, well, yeah, then that's like being in the music industry and writing about Filthy Rich Records, as far as I'm concerned. It's kind of a non-entity. I think, you know, one of the things that's going to be interesting to me is the guys that you are specifically stating in this scenario, the guys that will be affected are guys like Ishae Smith, Jay Leon Love, and the other guy, Arias, that you mentioned. You know, Golden Boy, it's interesting. You have to understand the Golden Boy Mayweather dynamic. They are certainly tied. They are certainly affiliated.
Right.
But Mayweather pays them a flat fee for every promotion. And I think they get the right to have an undercard fight or two. I think that's the way that deal works. I think that while Golden Boy and Mayweather are certainly tied at the hip in a lot of ways, they are also separate. Every Mayweather show that you see with that banner, Mayweather Promotions, they have never done a show, from my knowledge, that was without Golden Boy's license being used.
Yeah.
Okay, but I've seen a lot of Golden Boy shows where there's no pretense of having Mayweather Promotions.
Right. So what we're looking at is more Heyman, who seems to be, you know, have fighters in the Mayweather stable and have a lot of control over a Golden Boy. Is that what we're seeing?
Yes. Well, listen, Heyman to me is the key figure here. And Heyman is the almighty. It's funny. Pretty soon, I guarantee within a year, fighters are now going to start flipping it and start thinking Heyman before God. Right now, they're still going God before Heyman. They're going to start to flip that. Okay, they are, because the man's omnipotent. He really is. You got to give him credit. And
yeah,
Heyman is the key figure. But, you know, one of my friends, Matt Swider, that we both know, is a very sharp boxing fan, brought up an interesting scenario to me, and he also put it out on Twitter. What if this deal is so disastrous? Okay, let's say it's the worst-case scenario. Let's go with doomsday. And the offshoot of that is that with the pay-per-view losses mounting, that basically the budget is balanced at Showtime by taking money out of the license fees for Showtime fights. Well, as you mentioned, Gabe, who is a lot of those fights on Showtime? They're represented by Al Haymon.
Right.
So that would directly affect him. So that is the interesting part of this. Can you get Floyd Mayweather, despite the comforts and the built-in safety nets of that deal, to actually go beyond his comfort zone? I'm not sure about that. And it'll be interesting to see who actually ends up with September 14th, because if he's not fighting a Mexican, namely Canelo Alvarez, what point is there to fighting him on September 14th? And I got to tell you, if you do that, and if it's Devin Alexander against Floyd Mayweather, and I'm just going with the hypothetical here, I have no inside information, if you're Canelo Alvarez, let me tell you something, that alienates you if you don't get that date from Golden Boy.
As a Mexican, you got to be, you know, and as a Mexican superstar, you got to be pissed. How long is his deal last?
There are differing opinions about that. There are some people that think his deal might be over or very close to it. I do know this. One thing that has not been mentioned all that much, there is ongoing litigation as it relates to his former original promoter, All-Star Boxing, and Tuto Zavala. And they're not going away, and he's not going away, Tuto. I've been told by very good sources that in relationship to that contract and how he was eventually acquired by Golden Boy, that Tuto Zavala and All-Star Boxing, they have rejected two different settlement offers of over $1 million. And that leads me to believe that they think they have a very strong case. So I think the way they handle Canelo in the upcoming future as it relates to Mayweather and what dates he gets, I think will be a harbinger in terms of where he eventually lands. And listen, I actually think Golden Boy has done a pretty good job by him. And I think
absolutely,
if there was a real winner in this scenario, I think it's Canelo Alvarez, guys. He made his point April 20th with how well he drew and the fact that he beat Austin Trout and the fact that the May Day card, I think, suffered without his presence.
I agree. And you know, people can say whatever they want about the $10 tickets. He got 40,000 people to come see him do his thing. I mean, I don't care how much the tickets cost. It was impressive what he did. And we saw him in Anaheim. He drew, 10,000 out here?
He drew 13,000 in Anaheim for not Ricky Hatton, Matthew Hatton, and that was 2 years ago. And as it relates to the $10 tickets, I keep trying to point this out to people. Number one, not all 36,000 tickets that were sold were $10.
Exactly.
Okay. Also, another way you do this in figuring out the science of the boxing business, if you divide the total amount of tickets sold with the announced gate, which was about 2.77 million, that meant that in an arena that was configured for right around 40,000, they still averaged $77 per ticket sold. That is impressive for a non-casino venue.
There's just no question that he's a business. Yeah, he's a draw, and he's a burgeoning franchise. Last thing, let me ask you, but what do you think about Abner Morris, his performance and where he's going?
You know, I've always said this. I've never understood why Abner Morris isn't given more credit. I mean, people are still hung up on the fact he threw low blows against Agbeko. Those people need to get over it. He won in a rematch. He had a much more impressive run at 118 than Nonito Donaire. He had a bit of a soft run at 22, but he still beat a very difficult guy in Anselmo Moreno. And at 26, he did the job against a very tough, solid guy that most people did not think he was going to beat. If you look at his overall resume, I've always said, and I mentioned this in my article on Monday, I think in this whole pound-for-pound era, too many people look at potential and supposed physical talent, and they go by a certain perception, and they've always said that Nonito Donaire is simply a better fighter than Abner Morris. He might be. But till they fight, you know what I judge it on? What you've done in the ring. And all I know is this. I'm not saying either guy would ever beat Guillermo Rigondeaux, who I think is the toughest matchup in boxing, okay, especially below Mayweather. But based on how they fight, the performances they give out, and their actual resume, I dare anyone to tell me that Donaire actually has a better resume than Abner Morris.
I agree. You know, at this point, I mean, Abner's proved his point. He's the man to beat in those lower weight classes. The gauntlet that he's run, the skills that he's displayed, and the tests that he's been faced with, there's just no question. He's the man to beat. Do you think, well, that's just not going to happen. Rigo versus Morris. The problem is, you know, who does he face at this point? What challenges are available to him?
With Abner Morris, I believe he has a mandatory, so they'll take care of that. And I think a fight that makes sense, I think, would be Johnny Gonzalez, who had a very dominant victory over a Japanese fighter in Mexico a week or two ago. I think Jason Velez, who's with Kodo Promotions, who's tied with Golden Boy. There's the old Puerto Rican-Mexican rivalry. So those are useful fights. But if you want to talk about a big fight, and as L.A. natives or residents, we should be very excited about, but you got to cook it a little bit. You got to marinate it, because I think you have a chance to take that from the Home Depot Center to the Staples Center. Project in 12 to 14 months a fight between Abner Morris and Leo Santa Cruz.
Boxing heaven.
See, because I'm telling you right now, that is a fight that the styles just mesh. And there's a personal history there. They're friendly. But there's an underlying rivalry there, because I've seen them spar in the gym at Maywood. It was great stuff. Back then, Abner was becoming a world champion, or had already won a belt or two. And Leo Santa Cruz, like this developing young prospect. And Leo Santa Cruz, to me, is great television. I don't care if he's fighting the worst guy in the world or the best guy in the world. He always makes for great, entertaining fare. And I think that there's a buzz created every time Santa Cruz fights. There really is, because he's just this two-handed technician on the inside who knows how to take apart a guy. And I really think that if you build it, and I'm not saying it's going to be as big as like when Ruben Olivares fought some of his bantamweight fights against, you know, Bobby Chacon at featherweight, or the fight between Zarate and Zamora, because that's a bygone era. But I really think that if Golden Boy concentrates on the next 3 to 4 fights for each guy to eventually have a showdown at 26, as an L.A. native, I would be very, very excited about that prize fight.
Where do you think Chris the Nightmare goes, you know, from his loss? What does he do?
Well, I know what he's doing tomorrow. He's getting nose surgery. So, you know, he's going to be out a few months. But here's what I think hurt him. I think the fact that he was so busy a couple years ago, found his groove, and then he got Don kinged. I mean, Don tried to put the fight in Panama last year. I did not understand that. That fight got backed up. And then he was affected by the pullouts of Andre Ward. So you're talking about a guy who's not the most Spartan or disciplined guy, who had several fights backed up, got out of shape. His last training camp was spotty, to say the least, if you talk to Henry Ramirez. And it showed. But, you know, I have to tell you guys, I think in a roundabout way, him losing is not the worst thing. And I'll tell you why. Number one, it allows him to fight for less money, and it allows for Dan Goosen to once again get him active again, back into the ring, fighting another 2, 3, 4 times within a relatively short amount of time. But also, winning eliminators is great in one sense as a heavyweight. It means you become the number one guy, right? Here's the problem. That number one guy might be a Klitschko brother.
Yeah.
To me, and I'll be honest, if I'm a manager, and depending on how old a guy is, and I know Stiverne is like 33, 34, so time isn't on his side, but if I had a relatively young heavyweight, whether it's David Price, Tyson Fury, or Bryant Jennings, I'd manage in a way where I miss the Klitschkos. You know why? Because as a manager, I want to win fights.
Yeah.
That's my personal opinion. My goal would be to get you ready for a title shot so you don't have to fight the Klitschkos. Because you know why? Because I'm honest about it.
Yeah, I agree. That's a great, honest assessment, because he did his job. They fought him often. He got in shape. I mean, Dave and I visited camp, and it wasn't even his camp, but he was there training and all in shape and looked great. And then they didn't fight him. He did his job, and they didn't promote him. And they waited around for the HBO dates, and that's what happens. He died on the vine, especially a guy like him. And then we had this. I mean, it's no one's fault but his that he didn't train for Stiverne, but I think they just didn't capitalize on that momentum.
No, and a guy like him, I think, likes the money, likes some of the stuff that comes with boxing. But let's face it, guys, as it relates to work ethic, he's not exactly Leo Santa Cruz or Bernard Hopkins here, okay? I mean, because he's not even very focused when he has a fight on the table. I've heard every story, and Henry Ramirez, he's the only guy that could really train Chris Areola, in my opinion, because he's the only guy that has enough patience to actually deal with it, because you have to understand what you're getting into while you take that assignment. But one thing about Chris Areola that I like, and this is why I don't punish guys for losses, if you put on a good fight and you consistently put on good TV, I want you on my network. I want you on my air. And one thing about Chris Areola, I can't name you a lot of times where I've turned off the TV and said I was just utterly bored.
Right. No, I agree.
Yeah, I agree. He just it was a good heavyweight fight. I think boxing fans anymore, there's certainly like gallows humor that I've always found on press row, particularly, you know, in boxing. You're very good at it, Bert Sugar. Larry Merchant, there's a certain type of sarcasm that it's almost like homicide cops. On Twitter, people do it, and it's become this kind of very negative thing, and it becomes this, oh, this fight sucks, as opposed to actually being witty. I thought people piled on this fight. I thought they piled on the Amir Khan Julio Diaz fight in ways they shouldn't have. I thought those were good fights.
You know what's funny? I'm one of these guys. I defend Julio Diaz and Amir Khan specifically. I wrote a whole article. I mean, everyone wants to point out flaws in Amir Khan. And, okay, listen, you don't have to be Angelo Dundee or Chappie Blackburn to figure out the guy does make mistakes. You know what, though? Guys who make mistakes are fun. There's an old saying from the great legendary matchmaker Teddy Brenner about Harold Johnson, the old technically sound yet not exciting light heavyweight by the name of Harold Johnson. And he said, Harold Johnson is a perfect fighter. However, in our sport, we have no room for perfection. And the fact that Amir Khan could be pitching a perfect game and then give up the 15-run home run and lose it all in a matter of seconds, I think is fascinating. You know, I find Victor Ortiz fascinating because he could literally fall apart technically and psychologically at any time. And honestly, the dominance of Andre Ward in his safety-first style, I think, can be monotonous. As a fan, okay, and this is what I am. I am a fan first, is the way I look at it many times. Unless I'm really on press row, I want to be entertained. I want to have a memory. I want to have a moment. I want to laugh. I want to have something that I keep on my DVR. And the thing about Amir Khan, for all his flaws, is the fact he's given us memorable moments. I can't fault him for that. He's never going to have a good chin. He'll never box discipline enough for 36 minutes to never really get into any type of trouble. But Amir Khan makes for good TV, and for that, I cannot fault him.
That's very true. When you can look at moments within Floyd fights, I guess, the great technique, that's what you're kind of just watching. It's like one guy kind of using the other guy as a training dummy a lot of times. But I don't think of back like, oh, remember that 10th round in Castillo Corrales. That's what I think of, or the first round of Hagler-Hearns. Seeing how many great fights have we seen at the Home Depot Center? And you would call those guys flawed fighters. I'd call them, you know, fantastic warriors. That's absolutely true.
Well, Steve, yeah, and you know, it's so funny to me that I really wonder, do fans want to be entertained, or do they all want to sound like Angelo Dundee or Virgil Hunter? I mean, if I go to a movie, I'm going there as a movie fan. And damn it, I like Caddyshack. I like basketball. I like Bad News Bears. I don't need every movie to be Citizen Kane.
Right.
And I've always said about fans who actually go to fights and pay their money and just don't sit at home, acting like an armchair Whitey Bimstein, those are fans that I care about. If you're actually spending your money to travel out to fights, buying tickets, and spending all that cost, most of those fans, because I see them at fights and so do you, Gabe, they'll tell you right now, we want to be entertained. They don't need to tell you that they're the smartest guy in the room and they know something technical about boxing. Spare me that shit, okay? Because if you don't appreciate Floyd Mayweather, guess what? You don't have to. And that's one of the things that says, well, if you don't like such and such fighter, you don't appreciate boxing. That is the biggest trite statement that you can make right now, because most of the people that I see at fights that actually spend their hard-earned money, they will tell you they would much rather be at a Tim Bradley, Ruslan Provodnikov fight.
You know, it's funny. I've never, at a fight, had a conversation. Usually the conversations are, I'd love to see this fight, or did you see this fight, or we're watching a fight and it's awesome, or this fight's horrible because nobody's doing anything. Nobody ever says, like, oh, this counterpuncher would be really good against this counterpuncher. Like, I never had that conversation at the fights. Usually the styles matched are the most violent. you know, the ones that'll have the highest possibility of a lot of mayhem. I don't understand that. The people that are on Twitter, yeah, it usually is some sort of intellectual, not just Twitter, but online, that you generally don't go to fights. It's always that kind of skill argument. I don't really understand it. But, that's why
by
I block
the way,
him.
I think skill has morphed into taking no risk and absolutely trying to be defensive and never doing anything to actually extend yourself. To me, you know what real skill is? What Mark Tushar Johnson did, what Tommy Hearns did, what Ray Leonard did, what Marvin Hagler did, okay? To me, that's real skill. It's about offense and defense. It's about the entertainment value. And that, to me, is what attracted me to this sport, not guys trying to protect records of 75-0 and saying to myself, we literally have fans that are defending fighters that say, well, I'm never going to take a risk. I don't care about you fans, which is certainly their right. It is. You can fight it any way you want. However, as someone that's in the audience, I could like or dislike whatever I want to. It goes both ways.
Right. Let me ask you this before we let you go, Steve. What are your thoughts about Tyson Fury? Came down to the States. It was an exciting fight with Steve Cunningham. What do you think about him? You think he makes another trip here to the States, and did he do well down in New York, or who should he be going after?
Well, he's another guy that to me is fun. He's flawed but fun. He's not perfect. And do I think he has any chance against the Klitschko's? Absolutely none.
Right.
But I think I've said this before, if you take the two-headed Klitschko monster out of there and you go from 3 to 12 in the heavyweight division, you mix and match, you'd actually have a lot of entertaining fights.
That's very true.
The one thing you can't teach with Tyson Fury, he's built like a power forward. He has very good size. I don't know how durable he is. I mean, he got dumped on the canvas by a cruiserweight. But I think he's a fun guy. I think the more technically sound fighters that aren't completely physically overmatched, I think are going to trouble him. But he's a character. He brings some attention to the sport. And I still think down the line that him and David Price could make for a significant event out there in the U.K.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think so.
Yeah, I agree. All those fights, yeah, you throw them all together, and you're actually going to get something good. The Klitschko's, it's like, I don't know, I guess we're arguing against perfection, you know? We don't, with Mayweather and the Klitschko's.
Well, there's a double standard here, especially in our country. You know, certain fighters in our country don't get touched. They don't take any risk. All they do is win, and I hear it's just about boxing. That's what it is. Klitschko's do it, and they're called boring.
Right.
And they get knockouts.
Yeah, and you know, and another issue was there are certain writers, and I wrote about it on Twitter when this happened. Why is Rigondeaux labeled boring by the same people that do pound for pound lists that'll like glorify Andre Ward and Bernard Hopkins? My point is, they're all one and the same in a different way. So why is Rigondeaux being picked on by these very same writers as being boring when Rigondeaux is classically as good as anyone in boxing? If you really look at what boxing is, in and out movement, head movement, leading with the jab, counter punching, I wonder why the double standard.
And I would add this: he won a fight that he wasn't supposed to. He was a smaller man against a number three pound for pound or whatever the hell, wherever he is on the sliding scale, and he basically beat him 11-1. This wasn't a hand-picked Robert Guerrero. You know, this was a guy that was a top level fighter, and Rigo made him look like an amateur. He gets no love for that.
Yeah, and with Robert Guerrero, I've been asking matchmakers and managers that I really respect the last week or so since the fight. And again, there's a reason why he was an 11-1 underdog. First of all, Mayweather's very good. Whether you like him or not, he's very good at what he does, and he's perfected this style. But he's 11-1 for a reason. This is a guy that got beat by Gamaliel Diaz, got smothered by Salido, and his only real world title, I think, came at 126. Since then, he's won a bunch of interim belts, right?
Right, right. I think they've all been interim belts.
Right. So, and I asked various managers and matchmakers, if you match Guerrero up with Lamont Peterson, Lucas Matisse, Ruslan Provodnikov, and Tim Bradley, among others, are you sure he'd be favored in any of those fights? I don't think he would be. I'll be honest with you guys.
Yeah.
No. Well, he's new to the division, and it's funny. You beat Andre Berto and you get Floyd Mayweather, but you know, coming up, like, nobody's really rated Berto. He's kind of the poster child as the first Heyman creation, a guy that fought a bunch of nobodies on HBO, had a couple tough fights and didn't win them.
Today I was at the Ponce de Leon gym, which is right across from my old alma mater, Montebello High School, and I see, Soto Cross, who fights Berto on July 27th, and he's just hanging around there, and I said to him, hey, you beat Berto, you might get Mayweather. And it would have been real funny if he understood a word I said, since he doesn't understand English, but just trust me, I think he found it funny the way I said it. But I say it jokingly on Twitter, and it's an indictment on what has happened, because half the people say, you're right, Soto Cross and Mayweather would be a good fight. And I'm thinking to myself, are you people crazy? That's a 30-1 fight. Come on.
Yeah, well, it's a Mayweather world right now. It's, Manny got iced. There's one man at the top. And he gets to call the shots, at least on one network. It's going to be interesting to see what that guarantee does and how it all plays out. Each fight, is the Mayweather brand going to grow? Is Al Heyman's – is this experiment going to work? Do you have to spend money to make money? And ultimately, will the ship right itself? I'm really excited, man. It's going to be fun reading you write about it, whatever you say about it. So, Steve, thank you, man. We kept you on for 40 minutes. It felt like 5, so.
All right, absolutely, guys. Let's do it again soon, guys. Have a great night.
All right, my friend. Talk to you.
All right, then. There we go. Steve Kim breaking some stuff here on Leaving the Ring. And
Boy, do I have to go to the bathroom.
it's now back to a slow week for boxing, but we had a lot of stuff to talk about. Like I said, we did. Fight fans, well, we're close to the end of the show. Normally we go to 8 o'clock, but we're going to end it a little short here today. But we'll be back Thursday, So be sure you tune in. Gable, fun.
As always, Dave. You want me to knock out the schedule real quick?
Let's do that schedule.
Scott for permission to do this, but courtesy of badlifethook.com. Friday, May 10th, Buffalo Run Casino, Miami, Oklahoma. A guy born in Haiti that fights out of Canada. And a guy from Inglewood, California, Cleitos Pendarvis, Diary Jean, fighting in Miami, Oklahoma. Junior welterweights in action, 12 rounds for the IBF eliminator shot. Turiano Johnson versus John Thompson, middleweights, 8 rounds in support. The Masonic Temple, Detroit, Michigan, ESPN2's Friday Night Fights, Vernon Paris, Manuel Perez, welterweights, 10 rounds. Lonnie Smith versus Cornelius Locke, super featherweights, that should be a fun fight. 10 rounds. This should actually, across the board, this should also be action fights. Saturday, May 11th, Emirates Arena in Glasgow, Scotland, Sky Sports, Ricky Burns versus Jose Gonzalez, lightweights. 12 rounds for Burns, WBO title. John Simpson versus Choi Sivenparev, super featherweights in action. Keep Moat Stadium, Doncaster, England, Jamie McDonald versus Julio Ceja, bantamweights, 12 rounds for vacant IBF title. And that is your weekend fight schedule. It's light, but it should be action-packed. Dave, as always, it's been nice to be back this week, but it is good to have a short show because I'm starving and I really need to run off to the little writer's room.
Yeah, I've been doing like double shifts, so I'm just burnt out and tired. But we'll be back full-fledged on Thursday. Make sure you download the app, the 2.0 Leaving the Ring app. And Mikey Garcia's playlist is going to be up soon here on Leaving the Ring's mobile app. So make sure you download that. And again, we'll see you guys back Thursday. So enjoy the weekend with your family. Remember, don't drink or drive because you will spill your beer.
Peace.